Right, this is going to be another episode of Snake and Banter. Our guest for this one is Demps, who is a return guest. One thing I will ask you, because I know they actually do have like very particular titles, like some sort of 1980s Severance style Nightmare Fuel office system. What is your actual title at HLTV, by the way, Demps? What is it?
Brother, I actually couldn't tell
All right, fair enough, okay.
Just like writer, I don't know. Right. I don't actually know.
Okay, fair enough. Anyway, because he's the only one who doesn't mind then, even though it's just completely, you cut the legs out from what I was saying. Everyone else there was like, please refer to me as the senior writer, not editor. Like, fucking hell, all right, mate. Sorry, you've got the corner office, have you? Did you just get the recent regional partnership managers upgrade us? Fucking hell. I had to take the stock. But anyway, Demps is here. Oh, easy way to know. Here's what's funny. Here's what you guys don't know. I'll teach you all. I'll break the fourth wall as usual. I will teach you all as usual what you stupid plebs don't understand about this scene. He's the guy you should be sending all the hate to on social media. He actually has spicy opinions. Nero is just the fucking swatty nerd who just goes like, I always joke that he's like Hugh Grant of CS. I go, if I could just maybe make a point that maybe the guy with the higher number could be performing better. And you're all like, shut the fuck up. Why are you just obsessed with honesty and you think it's more like people like him have the actual opinions. He just gets to skate by like, lol, they reckon that Nero guy again. Fuck, God, it's not me. Like, anyway, you'll see. He has way spicier opinions. He has. You're the secret Nero that should be hated. He's just the good Nero. Exactly. I don't know, you're skating by. It's nonsense, isn't it?
Fly under the radar, mate.
That is the move. That is the move. By the way, I will also say, one thing I want to ask you before we start is this, Debs, is has there been an actual conscious change inside Hitshall TV to some of the approach to like content stuff? Because actually, by the way, I've noticed now, even though there was always like interaction with the forums, I actually do think calling that show like, like Modesty Fans Com or whatever, that is actually an obvious integration. It's a funny idea though. It makes sense to do that sort of thing. Has there been a conscious like change in direction at Hitshall TV or something? It seems like there's a lot more content in general comes out now in shows and stuff.
I think just in general, like over the, at least since I've been at HLTV over the last year or two, I think just like cognizance of content and what we're putting out and how it's perceived has kind of gone up. I think like maybe just a little bit of a shift away from like, we have to be the most strict, like news reporting right. site and everything has to be really dry and like factual. I think I've just detected a general shift and like people are always talking about it and how we can improve like the stuff we put out. So
yeah, right. Here's the thing. As usual, the guest always begins. So at the moment, what is good in CS2? What is good, Demps?
What is good is Falcons are now good. They've got Monacy, baby. Nico and Monacy have reunited. Falcons are cooking with gas. They've got an actual lineup that I think, hot take here is, wrong show, but hot take is, I think Falcons can be the team to break into that like top three of Mal's okay. Vitality Spirit. I think Falcons, maybe not like right now, maybe closer to the majors when we'll see it, but I think they're the team that have got the firepower to do it and actually look like they have a structure in place where all the roles fit. I think they can be the team to spice up the kind of top of Counter-Strike where it's been this like three team kind of system recently, and I think they can mix that up.
I mean I don't see why they wouldn't be actually third. I know you're saying it's a hot take, but I feel like in a power ranking I would put them third above Spirit right now also, just because if you have Nico and Monacy who were kind of Spirit, they were Spirit's demons last year, and Nico really was torturing Donk for 90% of their matchups, then I feel in the head-to-head on other positions, Monacy's better than Shiro. He's more impactful, for sure. If you have Kixan versus Chopper, I do actually rate Kixan higher. I feel like the mid-rounding is actually better for Kixan. I've only seen, really, for Chopper, maybe, like, one tournament last year where I was really, really incredibly impressed. I think the Blast Spring Finals was really Chopper's best moment as an in-game leader, but it was also mid-rounding on Anubis. That's what I vividly remember being his best moments, which is just like, okay, come on, like every single person and their moms is good at mid-rounding on Anubis at this point. And then if I go down the list, I think you could maybe make a case that like Zontix is better than Majisk, but then I would take Tessus over Magix today. Beyond that, I just think like it's watching the Falcons so far, immediate, like even with Monacy not playing well, some of the other guys on the team are actually showing up. I mean, I mostly mean just Kixan and Tessus. Kixan and Tessus have been really impressive as individuals. Majisk, okay, if I have to shift the whole like fraud watch off of somebody off of Zonic,
well, it has to be someone in Zonic at all times. It's not.
Fair I think enough. I think Majisk is pretty bad. Actually, okay. I think Majisk is a pretty weak anchor right now. I mean, yesterday he kind of skated by because he got a bunch of anti eco kills. But if you look closely on train, he only got two gun round kills. Two. Like that's pretty insane to me that you can get as an anchor player. But then you just win because everybody else was doing so much extra work on the team. So I think but every team has flaws. If Majisk is your biggest flaw right now on a team, you're in a pretty good position, okay? Compared to like a Spirit roster where I just feel like there's two players that are really pushing them over the line. If anything, like Testus is probably entering the conversation for a top 30 player in the world right now. I don't Zontix maybe like instead, but yeah, no. Okay. Back to your point. Yeah. I think Falcons look really good already. I haven't even necessarily gotten the superstar Monacy performances and they've already gotten top four at Melbourne. So this is really great.
If we're making this mainly, it's not just Falcons is good, up arrows, up dudes, etc. It's mainly the context of like they're going to break into this top three, top four thing and make it interesting. I do get like, I think that is a good framing because I'll put it this way, Demps. I don't know, like Maui's, listen, we understand Maui's in North America and he's spending all the rest of his time watching CS. I don't expect him to actually watch football, the glorious sport. That's okay. That's all right. But the analogy is going to come from that. So but if people don't know, this season, actually, people, my favourite team, Liverpool, wasn't expected to be a team that could win the Premier League, actually. They were expecting, in fact, some people, funnily enough, didn't even have them being top four because they just changed their manager, right? So the premise was people's expectations were very tempered, but they started the league immediately, Maui, like as like the best team, basically, like, almost from the beginning of the league. And they were actually having like an insane record of like barely ever losing. In fact, they hadn't lost for loads of games. And so what happened was, instead of people just immediately being like, should we like, you know, recontextualize this team? Maybe they're better than we thought they are, you know, like maybe, you know, No, what they did is like people just did like stages of grief type thing where they worked their way through until literally something mad like a week ago when it was like mathematically almost like they definitely won the league. People just had different stages of cope as to why like this somehow wasn't like you were just the best team in the league and that's why you were number one and going to win the league, right? So it went like, well, they haven't played anyone good yet to like, well, all right, they have, but they, you know, it's only early on when they've played them good to like, well, all right, they played them really good and they beat them and I guess they've won all the European games too. But at the same time though, how good are the other teams though? They all have injuries. What if their players come back? Their players came back. No, well, all right, you know what? Maybe none of the other teams are good. So anyway, the point is, you'll see where I'm going with this. That's all everyone's doing with Falcons though. It's why I keep making the point on these shorts. I am fine with you hating on the Saudis or just the Falcons org or even, by the way, Zonic's like total management of Falcons. Those are things that are very easy to mock or even are just stupid or they've done a bad job. It's easy. But I do think people have conflated that with like, I'm going to sort of like pull against the people in the server who have Falcons next to their name and in doing so act like they're shit, which by the way worked perfectly for you last year. If that's what you wanted to do, they served you up the dream roster to do that. They even brought you like sort of simple but giga washed and in a way where he had no chance to succeed. That was perfect hate viewing. The problem is you're gonna have a really bad year if you want to hate watch Falcons now, and one of the reasons why is I actually do feel like, to tie into what I just said, that's what people's new take on the scene is. At the beginning of the year you were all loving it when Spirit was still really good. You were all loving it when fucking Vitality took over and was on top of the scene. You even, some of you loved it when Mouse started to make those finals, etc. But now, the new take is everyone who isn't those teams gets no credit for anything because those are the only three good teams. Bro, people don't even count Na'Vi now. Even the, literally the same team of last year. That doesn't even count as like a group of human beings playing the game. And so people are just doing the same thing. They just go like it. Like if you're Falcons, even this last PGL win without Monacy, the whole take everyone was doing was like, but is there even anyone good in the scene except for Vitality and Spirit, which is like, that's so miserly a take. Because I actually do think, look, there's clearly a stratification. We can have that discussion. I think a lot of those teams are flawed. It's actually, by the way, why later on, maybe I'll bring up a point about Team Liquid. There's other teams that can gun for that last spot and make it a big four, big five, big six type scenario. But I do agree. I do think right now the problem is, it's actually not just, by the way, that we have these like three top teams of Vitality, Spirit, Mouse. It's that also Vitality completely batters and shits on the other two. That makes it even worse. Because I think people want to make it. Like any other team you consider in the scene, you're sort of saying Vitality is the best team to ever play CS if you make them good. Because at the moment, Vitality shits all over everyone and clears them by so much. So I'm with you, though. I do think the most obvious thing I've actually been thinking, funny enough, from the Vitality side during this event, is when I watch them just go into series, and no matter how much I theory craft, like why the other team should be able to get a map, or, you know, what, this was just a normal game. They just win every game at a canter, no matter how anyone plays. Even if Zemu, by the way, sometimes doesn't turn up, they still win the game anyway. Part of me does just like watch that and go like, fuck, is this the scene just cooked? But I have to say, this is why I agree with your good point overall. The first thing I do think to myself is, tell you what though, if it's the impossible mission to actually beat this team, I'd like to see Nico and Monacy have a bunch of cracks in it. Let's have those guys just go into a game, throw them their guns, and just go to work. Because I'm with you as well, by the way. Last year, one of the best combos to actually upset anyone was G2. It was like, if you have Nico and Monacy, go off. They obviously had Balbs as well. You could beat anyone with that sort of firepower. It is the classic, like, super team knockout power. They have the punchless chance. So I'm with you. I actually think that angle's also really good, too. Because even though people wanted to do the whole thing, which, by the way, I totally get, the last versions of Falcons did justify this, people did also want to believe, as other corp, that, like, but can we be sure Nico and Morrissey can still coexist? Like, spoiler, that hasn't even mattered. Like, yes, they quite literally walked in, and yes, are you ready, guys? It turns out that Falcons isn't magical. It's just a bunch of CS players. It's not that when Morrissey puts the Falcons jersey on, he's like, oh, I feel all my power being drained from me. Well, oh, now I'm really mediocre with the AWP. No, I just goes in the server, he's still fucking Monacy, so I'm with you. I actually think it's all looking up, all the markers are going up, but actually that angle's good because literally already at this event, like, they're basically almost dead. The event hasn't even finished, and they're, like, that far from basically almost having the status you're talking about, which is, by the way, the obvious thing as well that's going to happen now, even though the haters aren't going to do this because of the corp, is there should even now potentially be a dark horse for the major. That's on the cards too. Like, there's not many teams, again, people think can win the major because of Vitality. Any more on that, by the way, guys? There's a lot we can talk about there. Anything you want to go off there?
I was just going to say, I think it makes, if they do, and I think they will get into that top four, I think it makes it really an interesting dynamic of who can beat Vitality, because Mouse, yes, have the team, but they have no S-tier superstar. Spirit have Donk, and they've been together a long time, so there's like a lot of chemistry there, but maybe lacking overall on the firepower. And then Falcons clearly have the firepower. They have two like S-tier superstars, and Tessis is playing really well this year. So there's like a slightly different angle with each team as to why maybe they could, like, on the right day, get a series win over Vitality. And that's why I would love to see Falcons do it, and why it's my good point, is because I just think it'd be really interesting at the top. And like, how long can Vitality stay like at the pinnacle and you know, keep extending this win streak?
Right, Maui, what's your good point then?
Okay, my good point is a point that I just obviously can't talk about with Kassad on the call.
Oh, I see, right. So, I see where we're going here. Okay, right.
because if I do, he's just going to call me insane.
So you're now using this, like, you know when you have the group chat within the group chat without the one person, like you can't invite for the night out. Okay, we're doing that. Okay, fair enough.
Just have to exclude him for this kind of discussion so we can have any sort of reasonable back and forth regarding this. I think it's good that Hooksy's going to Astralis, okay? I think it's
actually... It's why you can't even do that as a hot take on Hot Take Point. It's quite a good hot take.
It's not even... I don't even know, because I don't even think it's a hot take to most of the scene at this point. I don't think this is... True. That's why it belongs on this show. I think Hooksy is... I know for sure that on one of these shows, Snake and Banter or Hot Take Point Made, that I said something like Hooksy should go to Astralis. In the Cadian Hooksy back and forth, I know for sure I said it. And I'm glad that it's finally happening, okay? It's a bit removed from when we saw Hooksy playing and calling his best CS. I mean, maybe not playing, but definitely calling his best CS. And for him to get an opportunity now, first of all, Astralis is in a point of desperation, so for them to sign him feels like a no-brainer, because you obviously needed to shake something up. He's been sitting right there, and I think he's been sitting in free agency. I could be wrong on this, but I mean, he's definitely available. And yeah, I think he's been a free agent for a while now, so at least HLTV says no team. So to see him playing again with Yabby, this is a team where I have no doubt he's going to make them look better than Cadian did. Even if he's about a year removed from playing Tier 1 CS, like the last match that he played was in June of last year. So it's actually going to be about, what, 11 months or so since his last game. But I just felt like on only two maps did I really think Cadian hit the nail on the head, or he really figured out how to mid-round. I think Ancient and Inferno, And I know that Hooksy is going to make, I think he's going to make them look good on probably four maps pretty much off the rip. So just glad to see that Hooksy's going to be playing again. I actually thought that at one point maybe Hooksy was going to have to retire, like if this spot didn't open up. Like, it almost, in a way, if Astralis kept, like, actually made the major and kept playing well, what, he would be over a year on the as a free agent or on the bench. I was kind of worried about him. So even for Astralis, I think this is good. And also, just flat out, for Hooksy, you know, alumni of the show.
What do you think, Debs?
I just think it's hilarious. Like, for me, Hooksy was probably the guy to get for a little while for Astralis, I think, or like give Hooksy a go. Like, basically, since he's been out of G2, like, I would, if I was Astralis, I would have been thinking about him the whole time. And it's just hilarious that, like, he only gets in the team when it is literally the last option. There is, like, nowhere left for Astralis to turn. Like, you weren't going to be able to, like, rejig to get Kadian back on the AWP so that he had some individual impact. Like, you're not going to change any of the rest of the team, really. Can't remove Device because he's Device. Can't remove Yavi and Staun because of the investment. You're not going to remove Stare because he's probably the best piece, like, it just consistently over the long term. Do I think it's good? I don't know if you can rescue that Astralis team, man. It feels like they're just cursed at this point. Like, Staun is just going to keep choking playoffs. Yabby's going to be up and down. Device is good, but he's not the same player he was. Like, I think they'll probably look a little bit better than the Kadian iteration, just because I think that iteration did look really bad. Kadian was such a no-impact player, and I think the calling wasn't great. But, yeah, I don't know. I would say that I can agree that they're going to look better than they did under Kadian, but that's because they looked so rough under Kadian for large portions of the time.
I think I'm in a similar boat, because this was just one where, to me, I'm almost puzzled for real that they didn't do this move, just because I feel like if you did it really early on, I think you would have gotten like crazy community goodwill. If you notice, right, there's even a subtle point that actually Astralis and the rest of the scene miss, which is you even would have actually gotten this bizarre scenario where, by the way, the same thing would happen with Snacks tomorrow. If there was an appropriate team, I don't know what team it would be, unfortunately, because it, with him, it wouldn't be Astralis. It'd have to be something ridiculous like OG. But if he went and was like IGL, but on like a lesser team where there weren't the same stakes and he didn't have Nico and Monsey and wasn't expected to win, you would actually find that the joke is even someone like Maui would try go out of their way to make a tweet like, but I'm glad to see, you know, he's got another gig. Because actually at that point in time, what you almost try to do is show that, like, look, I didn't actually hate this person. I just thought they weren't good enough to be in that analogy G2, or in this case, also G2, the last version. So the problem is, I actually feel like if you ever go back and watch these shows, I think we even did one of them, mate. Like, if you ever go watch those shows when people were talking about that era of G2 and should it be in the team and should fucking they've kicked JKS and should Hooksy be the IGL, that was like the topic for like 6 whole months on shows. There was almost no one, by the way, back then actually had the take that people now think. The joke is Zoni Kassad even has this, and that's, let's be real, it's just because of all the personal beef and the fact that they've actually like made fun of each other on camera and stuff. But aside from that, he would be way more reasonable, because you are right, like the joke you're making, Maui, is Kassad at this point in time is doing that thing where, like, if a woman's really mad with you, she's like, I wouldn't sleep with you if you were the last man on earth. Like, that's like fucking Kassad's position. Like, he wouldn't accept Hooksy's application when everyone else has died in a post-apocalyptic nuclear war and there's only 2 people left in the world. One is Kassad, who's now pretending, after going half mad from radiation sickness, that he's the GM of a team still. He's still trying to, like, actually lend fucking money to Jacob's dead body at this point in time. He's just still going, accepting applications. The only application left is Hooksy, also driven mad by wandering in the post-apocalyptic wilderness. All he can do at this point in time is apply for a gig for a team that doesn't exist, in a game that doesn't exist, in a world composed of two humans. And the point is, Kassad would still say, I'm sorry, Mr. whatever Hooksy's surname is, your application has been denied. We have found a more suitable candidate. P.S. Don't ever fucking talk shit to me in an event. If those cameras were off and I wasn't being paid a king's ransom in the Balkan country, I would fucking whip your ass with this belt. But that's what he wanted to say through those that smile when Hooksy was right next to him. By the way, that's the other thing you guys don't know as well. Hooksy's just some fucking Danish nerd who should be like carrying a CRT monitor to Copenhagen Games. And he was just stood next to Kassad an actual guy. You've seen that picture of him that I call the coldest, aka the picture that goes the hardest in CS Esports steps, is that picture of Cassad with that AK looking out over that park. It's, mate, it's too on the nose. Like, all of a sudden, I understand the entire Balkan conflict of the late 90s. To that one picture alone, it really did paint a thousand words. So anyway, the point is, yes, obviously, aside from Cassad, I actually think almost everyone in the scene's position on Huxley was this. They think it's debatable whether he should be the G2C IGL, but aside from that, he can have his go at any other team. I'm pretty sure everyone else thought, right, can he have a go in Liquid since Cadian's fucking it up? Can we send him to, by the way, Astralis is one of the first ones, if they're kicking out Blame F, let's get this guy in. Because remember, no one was saying back then, bring Cadian over. In fact, a lot of people even thought the device move was dodgy. So to me, I thought that was like a rare example of where everyone outside the team seemed to think it was a slam dunk. Like, you just do this move. And also, by the way, it's just a good like narrative change, whether it works or not, to be like, well, we brought in a real IGL. Look, he's just had all this. By the way, they could have even used the angle of he just won all these prestige events with fucking G2 and he's going to work with all these players. So I agree with you. You've blown that completely, which, by the way, here's why I'm actually a little bit worried. This is why I'm actually a little bit worried, Debs. Because I tell you what that actually makes me think. It doesn't make me think Astralis is just blind. I don't know. Everyone would love them to sign this player. It actually makes me think some of the people in this team might not rate Huxley. And that they did have this floated by. I mean, by the way, it was already implied by, I believe, Rugger publicly in an interview, but I got the vibe as well. In that, I'm just going to tell people an obvious angle I hope people have looked at, which is supposedly in League of Legends, the legendary player Faker, who has all the great titles of all time, he's played his whole career in one team called T1. And the premise goes, basically, Debs, if you're not from League, he's almost like the coach of that team. Like, he's not officially, someone has the title coach, but basically, he probably gets what he wants because it's just his team, bro. You're not ever going to kick him and you want him to be happy and to, you know, feel like things go. If I had to guess, I'd imagine he has some level of, say, device in fucking Astralis, guys. Like, I don't think they just go, hey, bad news, mate. We've got KD and his IGL now. No, I'm pretty sure they float it by him. Like, look, we're going to bring this move in, you know, Nick Clyde. What do you think? So that implies to me, I'm sorry, I actually think some of the players in Astralis are actually elitists and think, who the fuck's Huxley? What, that Copenhagen Wolves? Nah, actually, you know what? Maybe forget about that. That's because I think the difference is they are willing to look at KD and who they had all that success with and go, hey, he could be like a big captain who could be. I think, by the way, in a weird way, this is what people don't get. I think star players actually want people who are sort of like firmer hands and big personalities. I think the problem Huxley had, this is what people forget, is he wasn't actually shitting IGLing, guys. His problem was he was a very bad fragger and it looked like, quite frankly, he got sort of dwarfed by having those giant superstars. It looked like he couldn't say no to the Nikos and the Monsies the world, basically. And so even though at one point that worked when they're all popping off, it looked like in the latter era when you needed to get more from them, you just couldn't. Like, I actually do think, unironically, same premise, I'll attach it to that. Spoiler, I think Nico was just the secret IGL when they brought Stax in, and it worked better than Huxley. I'll just say that right now. I know they had mobs as well. That's true, Huxley. You did, but in the same way as you fucked over Alexi B, where he didn't have JKS and you did, that's what happened to you, mate. Then they got mobs and you did it, and you had fucking Nexus instead. We all know the circle of sock that goes with the bullshit roster moves that the IGL gets blamed for in G2. We've all been there, mate. We've all been there. So anyway, to bring it all back, yes, I actually agree. I think you're making a pretty good point there, mate. Right. Let me think. By the way, is there anything you want to bounce back off on that?
I just said I feel like it's also one of those things for Astralis where if they're like the way they're going to move forward from this, I feel like I don't know. Like Staun seems hard to rehabilitate. He just does not seem like he's playing at the level that we're used to. And he seems also like he's been one of the guys that just...
Oh, true. Yeah.
Almost like Hunter at the beginning of CS2, he just never really made the switch. Like, there hasn't really those Staun moments for him that... Like Device and Yabby and Stare actually seem like a good trio. But I just feel like, at this point, Astralis are kind of doubling down on the Stabby signing that they just have to go through with it because it was so expensive. But... in a weird way, if this goes badly, I feel like Astralis do need to look hard in the mirror and just say, like, okay, Staun is not doing what we signed him to do. We need to move on from this. So I think that's going to be the tough decision for them. And in a weird way, I wish they, even without knowing a single thing regarding how Huxley is going to be as an in-game leader, I hope the next move that they make is actually, if things continue to go south for them, is to just remove Staun and try to get another Danish up-and-comer.
By the way, that's one thing actually, you just reminded me of one thing I didn't say there, which is I also do personally hope, since he literally played with the guy, that he could be the guy who like turns Yabby around again. Because I actually think the difference is Stouns at least put numbers up. Yabby has been so hot and cold the whole time he was in Astralis. It's actually sad. Because I do think actually when he joined that Heroic team, like that wasn't just like an immediate upgrade, which it was. Like, bro, he himself just played like 1.5 times better than he ever had in his whole career. So I don't know what that is, by the way, because obviously he even had Cadian as his IGL at the time. I know it was a different setup because of Heroic, but I thought he never looked as good in Astralis. Like, he's one of the people, in my opinion, was the check stealer. Like, they just arrived, seemingly kicked other people off the team, and then they weren't performing like they used to in Heroic. So that's one of those ones where you just, as Corp, you just hope his old IGL can bring something out of him or recontextualize him, etc. I also do hope as well, by the way, if I think about how, what's his name, Huxley used to play in a G2 especially, I could also see this actually opening up the game for Stair a little bit more. Like, hopefully now Huxley will just... One thing I'll always give Huxley credit for is he did try to do the Carrigan thing and just be like the fucking bait all the time and just 24-7 run in and let yourself get killed. Like, I actually... This is what people don't get. That's actually one of my criticisms of Snacks. You know when you, a random fucking caster who remembers how lovely and awesome Snacks was 10 years ago, want to get some free goodwill so you overhype him killing two people in the mid-round on Mirage? Like, he shouldn't even be there, you moron! He should have been the first going in, getting baited up for fucking Albs, and then he would have just like actually won the round off that instead of just getting like two all right kills on someone. So you were like, woo, roll back the fucking years. So even though I made it negative to begin with, I actually think like Debs, there's like, essentially you just like missed this boat by about 6 to 9 months. Like, you should have just done this after the fucking player break, basically after the Copenhagen Major. But it's still, I agree with you though, it's still a worthwhile move, Debs. Just, it's like, put it this way, to quote the great Christopher Hitchens, he had a great quote he used to say, which is, America is a country that always does the right thing last of all. Like, his joke was, they do everything else, and at the end it's like, well, fuck it, guess we might just like send some troops in and save the innocents. So it's like, you create the whole scenario. But anyway, Astralis has done the same thing. They've done, think about all the moves they've done since they kicked Blame F after that super team began. Even in the short term, when they look good, these moves always backfire, they never work out the long run, and it's actually kind of a fitting epitaph that they never made a single major or actually even bloody came barely close at all. Like, so I agree. At this point in time, there's nothing left to try, by the way. Like, spoiler, the next thing to try after Huxley comes in is you just blow the whole roster up. And like, it's, by the way, then it gets really sad, because like I said on Twitter, people don't know it's a blessing they're kicking Cadian now, because I can tell you what the next move is. Thank you, Nikolai, for how many years of, you know, 9 years of, it'll be retirement made. Like, that's the other thing, Demps. He's not going to have a 15-year career, bro. Surely he's going to be retired in the next year, especially if you're not going to majors, you're not winning anything. Sam, were you? Even Device has now finally entered that CS royalty territory, bro, where, like, we all do it. We all just do the Kenny S. He's back! He's back when he has a great series. We all do, but we all know we're sort of lying to ourselves, you know what I mean? He's not as good-looking as he was when we met him. Listen, we still love him. He's going to be our partner for life, but, you know, you can see the wrinkles are setting in. You can see he looks a bit more weathered. You can see that joy in his eyes has gone, you know.
As you do.
Exactly. Exactly.
I got a last point on Astralis. Yeah. Is how many more tries will they get? Particularly with big players with bigger salaries.
Well, remember, because didn't they also say they're actually, they did fire the Heroic guy who came in as like the...
Oh, yeah, yeah, Strauss.
So I guess it's like a new regime too, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But I was just thinking is like... The financial impact of missing so many majors in a row must be crazy. I think there has been rumblings. I don't know how credible that they are potentially in some financial trouble, like having missed this major. How many more shots are they going to get with big players? You know, I think you said that the next option is to blow up the roster. They might have to, just financially. Like, say, look, we can't afford big players anymore. We'll have to go down like a, you know, much more modest route with Danish talent.
Right, I've picked a very, very simple one for my good point. I actually imagine it's going to be very easy and wide open for everyone to talk about. In fact, I'm not even going to do the usual Thorin, like, impromptu 10-minute free Thorin starts that I just cram into a small box and then pretend is part of a talk show. It's actually very antisocial to just make people sit there for 10 minutes while you talk at them. I'm just really good at it. That's the problem. And then what I do is I also add in like a little bit of charisma to make it appear like I'm having a conversation between me. Like, they're almost like, they're just the people, you know, doing the fucking hot dog react thing as the NPC streamers or whatever. I'm just the one pressing the hot dog button. That's it, basically. There's no actual, if you ever watch, it's all smoke and mirrors, guys. There's no actual interaction going on. But this time I will actually throw it to them first, because I want to open it like this. Bro, after everyone went way too hard banging on that Liquid roster when they went to PGL Bucharest, where they'd had like a week to play or something. By the way, spoiler, he didn't realise how crazy this was, Maui. But to me, the fact that JW, who was on the show, was like, yeah, actually, we were scrimming against them. It's like, brother, they're scrimming against eyeballers. Like, you want them to then go and clap Falcons? Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, let's just be reasonable, guys. So I do think people did the classic, like, mega overreaction to that first result. And even then, by the way, I will tell you, I know this is going to sound like super corp, but if you even go and look, well, even some of the maps, sometimes they were losing like 13-11 maps and stuff, you know, they were just instant like 13-0'd by everyone with no chance to even play CS. Like, to me, it was always so obvious that like, there's no way that's the actual level of this Team Liquid squad. Come on, like, that's like the nightmare fuel, like everything goes wrong. It goes, that's why I even made that fucking straight fire joke on Feed the Trolls, which I'll now reuse because I learned a long time ago, not everyone watches everything. So use the smaller podcasts like a sort of grit, like a fucking, what do you call it, open mic night, right? You don't worry about whether the joke lands or not, and then you use the, you save the better material for the big show like this, so no one watches that thing. Yeah, no one watches that thing with whatever her name is, Technological Woman or something. So anyway, this is the real show. So the joke I made was, well, of course he didn't get a honeymoon period, they wouldn't actually marry him, would they? Because remember, he's only on trial technically at the moment, he's not actually signed to Team Liquid. It's a pretty good joke, but it's true, they didn't get any honeymoon. But the point is, the honeymoon's just now, isn't it? Like, it actually looks like, what's funny is, it didn't even seem when I was watching the forums, like, people got that hyped about Liquid. Are people that fatigued? This is where I want to start off. I think it's just, when I watch Liquid in this tournament, guys, and I don't do things like think about how long it's been since they won a tournament or what was going on with Yekindar, all the shit that doesn't have anything to do with this roster. If I just watch this roster, bro, I'm kind of hyped. Like, to tie it into what I was referring to earlier, I put them in that Falcons category where I was like, maybe in the next event, they'll be at that status where we're talking about, like, a big five that suddenly, by the way, the playoffs could start getting fucking amazing. We could have these insane quarterfinals. Like, to me, this team's like that far from being there. I actually thought even in this tournament, like, they're looking pretty good. Basically, against everyone except Vitality, who at the moment can shit on literally everyone. By the way, Vitality just 13-0'd Mouse, like, the last tournament, guys. Like, does everyone forget that? That's the second best team. They 13-0'd them. So I think Liquid actually just looks good. I'm just going to start there. They just look good, mate. The future looks good. The potential looks good. The squad looks good. There's not that many negatives. We can nitpick if you want to say, how did they get to number one and number two? You can do that. But as of right now, I actually just have very positive feelings towards this Liquid roster. What are your thoughts, boys? Where are we going on this?
I feel like this is watching Liquid in the macro now is just, it's actually pleasing. It's actually like their T sides just actually look like a team that has multiple ideas in a round, finds pretty creative ways to convert on those ideas. And my biggest qualm with Twist as an in-game leader in the previous seasons was that he would just go for these super basic finishers on maps. Like, the amount of times I watch them just 3 to 4 guys walk out door on nuke, and the amount of times I just saw them send 3 to 4 guys up porch side on Inferno late in a round was mind-boggling. And it made me want to pull my hair out watching them, because it's like, you have such skilled individuals, but you're putting them through a meat grinder every time to try to get into a bomb site. And watching Shuhei and Naf already, Naf's already back in some ways. Like, he's the way he looked in this Mongols game was great. I know that the stats may look kind of bad, but there were a lot of moments at this tournament where Naf just was given the freedom that I think he needed. I don't think like the stats actually are really super super sick for Naf at this tournament. Like, he hasn't always been
sort of a mega-esque player though, with the stats are never that crazy for him anyway.
Yeah, like, they sometimes lie, don't they? Yeah. On his impact as well.
Yeah, and so it's not that he like had a huge jump in performance statistically. In fact, he actually has some kind of, he had a pretty poor rating at this tournament. But like, there were rounds where he's just winning them on his own because he's given the space and freedom to lurk. Like, he's actually on Anubis, I remember they would just send multiple people in different directions, and then sometimes he would just pick a timing at B main to go in, and that would win the round. Like, he'd get one kill or just take the space away from the CTs, and he did it also on, I think, actually it mostly has been just Anubis that I've seen him look good on lately, but it's just that I think people are, ultimate's looking a little bit better too, and I feel like Twist also was returning. I mean, Twist maintained some of his form, but really, it's just the macro sense of watching their T sides. Like, it's much more pleasing. There's more moving pieces. They're going for slightly more complicated finishers that involve lurkers, And to me, that's a good sign. And I didn't expect Shuhei to change the team overnight, and he didn't. Obviously, Bucharest didn't go well for them. But for them to already have a competitive playoff series versus the Mongols in their first, what I would consider their first real outing, by the way, with no serious coach behind them. Like, DeMar DeRozan, for people that aren't really familiar, he's an analyst for them. Like, he has cool ideas in terms of, like I've talked to him over breakfast before. Like, he has interesting ideas of how Counter-Strike should be played and kind of, like, off-meta ways that he thinks that teams should incorporate stuff. And he's, but I don't think he's really, like, he's not providing, as far as I know, like, really sick tactical feedback.
I'm fucking high at your standards for breakfast, Maui. You just fucking, I'm just waking up, wiping the dew out my eyes. What's that, like, a yogurt? You're like, so what do you think about the way they're mid to being on? Just fucking look
at. No. He told me, he told me this at Singapore. So it has been like 5 months since I've talked to him. I'm sure he's better now. I'm sure he's actually much more knowledgeable about the game, but he did kind of like make it clear. He's like, I'm not endemic to the game.
Cause you know, I've said he's like a coach in a timeout say one stupid thing who he hates. Like he treats that footage like the Zapruder film and studies it frame by frame and explains how like that means they have to be fired from their job. Like I was like, holy shit. We're like, now we're judging people on breakfast comments. Like, holy, I know what you mean now. You just meant that's where you met him in the hotel. But holy fuck, like, listen, don't talk to me during breakfast. My game's not, I'm not at a 10 out of 10 level when I wake up, mate. I don't know why.
I mean,
3 hours at least.
Just ask me stuff in the afternoon, please, Mo. Don't judge me on shows.
Dude, okay. Also, I just slept for 4 hours myself, so everybody's going to judge what I say, because I was just watching Melbourne like 4 hours ago. But either way, people will judge what I say, like, to a T on the show right now. But I mean, no, but I mean, he admitted himself. He's just not endemic to the game. You know, he came from Valorant. So it's like, I'm sure he has cool. Okay. He was like a MIT stats guy that made his project about Valorant. I think he worked for NRG Valorant. And then he
is that the ultimate selling point, Debs, for these fucking Yanks? Why do they all just want, they're all just like deep state operatives. They all just want, like, used to work in like aerotech for like, you know, fucking Boeing. Like, well, it's not like the Valance thing. Why is it never just he's really like good at CS? It's always like, he came from like the code cracking division of like, I think he like did the Enigma code or something. Like, what are you talking about? Like, you're that, okay, fair enough.
I haven't mentioned the university I went to for like fucking 8 years or something.
You've got to be flexing that all the time. Come on.
Yeah.
All these people without degrees.
Americans, man.
Of course, okay.
If your university has clout, maybe you should. Maybe you should.
It helps. Maui says that because Maui does like shamelessly point out that he went to Columbia or whatever it was. So, that's where you went, right?
Yeah, okay. Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah.
Listen, you paid for it. You might get your value for the money. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Right, graduating was the hard part there. Yeah. No. Beyond that, I just think Liquid look a lot better in the macro. I think their T sides look good. I'm actually engaged when I watch a Liquid game now because I know there's going to be some interesting ideas behind these rounds.
What do you think, Debs?
Yeah, I'm fully on board. They look so much better. I think most people who knew what they were talking about knew they would look better with Shuey, like particularly on the T sides, because like Mami says, the T sides were really bad under Twists. Like, it was like Babby's first T side a lot of the time whenever you were watching Liquid play. It was so simplistic, so straightforward. Like, there'll be ESEA main teams doing more complicated T sides than what Liquid were doing. And Lurkers didn't have jobs on Twist's T sides. Like, they sat in an area of the map and just chilled for a minute 40. Like, that was what a Lurker did. They had no job. I knew. I was expecting them to be a hell of a lot better. The core is there, man. Like, Twist Nerds as your, like, kind of core riflers, and then Naf as, like, your anchor alert guy. Like, that's a really solid rifle trio, you know, depending on what your opinions are of Naf these days. But still, like, Twists and Nerds, they can still bang, man. They're still really good. Ultimate, I think, as long as he doesn't have to think, can do a job as, like, an AWPer in Tier 1. So, yeah, like, I'm on board. I'm ready to watch Liquid and see how far Shuey can take them, assuming he gets, like, more than just kind of a trial period. But yeah, I think they can come the major. I would not be at all surprised to see him in the playoffs.
Oh, absolutely. Put it that way. By the way, I'll also just throw this out there. I agree on the coach point as well, but technically they haven't even completed the team. Like, there's still room to go and get like a bigger. Here's the sad thing. We'll get to this later, but I was even low key. I'm a Mark too, Debs. I was hoping it was like the Ash announcement today. Like, welcome Team Liquid Ash. Like, that fucking, someone even did a like Google Photoshop. I wanted so badly to believe it was real. Cause the problem is, it just seems like another, like I said about the Hooksiest transfer. It seems like a slam dunk move. You just get insane goodwill from everyone in the community if you do the move, and it might even be a good move. So I was with you for that one. I'll put it this way. The only negatives I see about this team is, like, one, there's the NAF one where he just doesn't have great numbers. But like I said, I also think it does remind me of, like, the latter period of Magiskin Vitality. I always thought he's a player where what he does in the game doesn't just show up in raw stats. Like, they have, like, an extra impact on how they control or close out around, etc. And then the ultimate one, here's the key thing. That shows you how good I think the Riflers are in Liquid, actually. And I think every other piece in Liquid could be world-class. So that's why I don't immediately call, like, Ultimate has to be fired. Like, he can have his goal with this team, because I actually think in this team, you saw it when they had Orsi. He was never, like, the biggest problem all the time. He just wasn't as good as, like, the top European AWPers. But a lot of the problems were elsewhere in those rosters where he played. So it's the same thing with Ultimate. I'm with you. He can be serviceable. So for right now, as long as people like Nerds play, like, star players and Twists and NAF does his job, then actually he can probably survive for now. We can do what we're talking about. He can be, like, a top five team, and he can be in these matches, and he can be occasionally beating the spirits and the mouses of the world or something like that. So, like I say, unless it becomes the thing of why isn't Liquid winning the tournament, then we'll have to have the Ultimate discussion. Because I'm sure that you kick the can down the road, it'll happen in like 6 months or something when they haven't won a tournament, or they keep losing to some team with Zebu or Monacy. It's just an obvious thing people will bring up. Even though half the people bring it up will all be the people who 1 year ago, after Just Blast groups, were like, he's fucking insane! Definitely don't sign anyone else! So what? Same people, of course. I tell you what, even though that was a bunch of bollocks, that thing I made fun of that all the fans said there, I tell you what is actually not bollocks. Definitely this isn't the copy, but sorry, I'm freestyling, is these Turtle Beach headsets and all of their products. Again, let me just check notes. In fact, not bollocks. They didn't ask me explicitly to say that, but I'll again confirm they are not bollocks. Because here's the thing actually about these, is if you notice, I'm just using my normal headset, obviously. The most underrated thing is they look massive, but the best thing is I actually have really big ears. They fit fully over your ears. And I don't know about you if you've used old school gaming headsets. One of the most annoying things you can ever have is when they sit on part of your ear, because it means you can only handle a yarrow or two. That, like, fatigue gets you. And I can tell you, one of the worst things back in the day when they all had those little leather inserts on is they actually make your ears sweat, and it gets really uncomfortable after a while. And famously, if the temperature's at all high in the house, it's actually, like, really irritating. And you also feel, by the way, it's so gross when you take them off. That doesn't happen at all with these. Like, the tech on these is mega. It's actually not like leather. It's like a type of, like, I'm not even sure, but it's like a type of fabric that's, like, slightly different on this inside part from the outside part. It's really nice. It fits snugly, but it doesn't grip or hold your ears at all. Also, the actual tech, by the way, is way better than I was aware gaming headsets had ever become now. Like, first of all, it has like an 80-hour battery life. Like, I'm a boomer, mate. I hate things you have to charge because I always forget to do it. You know, this has 80 hours. That means you don't have to charge it every 2 days. You can do it like every 3 days, basically, and just charge it. You'll be fine. Also, it has this thing where you get, like, these two USB things to plug in, where that's actually the main feature of this. It's called, like, crossplay wireless audio system, and basically it means you can, like, do two things at once by pressing a button to switch between. So if you're playing on, like, your console or whatever, like an Xbox or something, if you get a call coming in, you can have it plugged in and just press a button and take the call on your headset. If you're, by the way, say you were, like, cooking some food right now, you could also be listening to this show, and then also if somebody had a phone call came in, you could switch to that as well. So it actually has, like, mega features, basically just like quality of life upgrades. So shout out to Turtle Beach. Obviously you can go to turtlebeach.com, use the code, it's on your screen, easy to remember, it's the better version of CS, CSGO, that is the code, CSGO, for 10% off your entire order. That's 10% off your order at turtlebeach.com with promo code CSGO. After you purchase, they do technically ask, like, where did you hear about us? So just tell them, buy Snake and Banter, or Maui Snake, or Last Free Nation, or Thorns, just say something like that, it'll help big us up. Also, you do get to save the 10% off everything. And by the way, it's technically 10% off everything off the website, and they don't just do headsets, by the way, even though that's the thing they're most famous for, they do, like, all sorts lots of gaming accessories, mice, keyboards. So check it all out. Thank you to Turtle Beach. Thank you to everyone on this show who buys them. Thank you to everyone who listened to that. And if you don't like listening to that, fuck you. That's not even, they didn't pay for that. I just said that. Yeah. That's just the, I yeah. threw that in for free. In for- yeah, just, I just said, I'll throw a shot at my own fan base anytime I feel like it. Right. Let's now go to the bad points. So Demps, What do you want to moan about? What's bad at the moment in CS?
I want to moan about the MRQs, man, the major regional qualifiers, because the RMRs, like, for all their flaws or whatever you thought about them, they were at least really cool. Like, it was a massive moment in the season. It didn't just make or break teams. It could make or break the CS divisions of organizations. Like, that was the financial incentives on the line with the RMRs. We got to see all the top teams there, so you got to see cool matchups that you don't normally see, like, you know, these up-and-coming teams getting to play against top teams. It was mega pressure. Like, I remember doing an interview with Rops for one of the PGL RMRs, And he said that it was like the biggest pressure moment of the season. It was right. way bigger pressure wow. than the major itself.
Right.
So we had these like super cool LAN tournaments, like pretty robust format. You got so many cool narratives and stories to come out of them. And then these major regional qualifiers that we got were so just like, there was no hype. It was dead boring. The fact that, you know, the top teams aren't there, it's already not interesting. Online, even less interesting. Best of ones, like, it was just... And the viewership dropped something crazy. It was like, it less than halved the viewership, like, compared to the previous RMRs for these MRQs. So I just wanted to lament the fact we've lost the RMRs. I thought they were really cool. I know they had issues, and I know there were, like, angles where you could say it's not great, but I thought they were so much better than the MRQs we got this time around, for sure.
Yeah, it's not really the best entertainment product in the current form that they're in. I would love for Valve to give the same resources to the TOs to run the RMRs that they did for the now MRQs, because if you leave the TOs to their own devices, I don't see any TO. I've mentioned this like when we first found out the MRQs were to be played online. It's just like, I don't see any reason that if I'm a TO, if at the end of the day it's about the bottom line, why wouldn't I just kind of run these online ones? Because I mean, as far as I know, they were funding part of the running of the RMRs or aiding in that. So if it's just like, it's just such a worse product, because yeah, no, I was watching it too, and it just felt a lot more lifeless, like seeing some webcams. Like the only thing we got from some of the teams was they recorded their own reactions after the fact, because I don't think the camera, I don't know, maybe they can. I don't know. We saw like reactions for certain teams once they qualified, which is cool, but you just wish that the whole story was drawn out in the way that it is. Like I'm so used to watching some team of two guys I'd never heard of before that RMR qualify and like on a team of five. And then James Banks goes up to them immediately and then is asking them a question. Like that's just the feeling I get, you know, that's what I'm used to seeing. And now yeah, this time around, it's like, they just do this.
Yeah. Dead.
They just close the webcam for people that are audio only listeners. They just turn the webcam off and then that's about it. Like they're just, it just sucks, man. And also on the other side is like the losing aspect of it. I mean, I don't feel that you couldn't get any emotions from any of the losers. Like it would have been sick to see even Astralis or Gamer Legion and just see their reactions. Like I'm not saying I'm praying on Gamer Legion's downfall.
No.
But I am saying that seeing their reactions after what was showing to be a really promising season for them, it's like, how are they feeling? I don't know really. Like that's all of what makes this great as an entertainment product and a narrative building storyline of just how everybody is taking these things is always part of their journey. So to not have that does feel like we lost a lot. I will say, you know, on the counter to this, it's not really a counter to your point. I am glad that the VR Rust for the most part gets the top 10 teams in at least to the major with no questions asked. I'm glad that we're seeing all of those rosters there and we don't have like some Spirit that crashed out of the major or some shit like that because Donk had the flu or something, because that would just be the worst in terms of the actual major itself.
Just a quick question. Did we ever have that though? Like obviously Astralis missed out on those majors, but we never actually from the RMRs had a team that you thought, are they maybe G2 actually?
There was one time they also went outsiders with the champions. They didn't make Blast Pirates, but that's about it. It's very rare it ever happened, put it that way.
Even Cloud9 with Axile and Shiro also didn't make it at Paris as well. Like there were a couple.
Oh yeah, that was a crazy last chance qualifier, that one.
Yeah, yeah. So there's been like,
but it's only a couple of times.
Teams.
But it's true. By the way, I always used to say that about, we're just lucky it never happened. Like the worst example obviously would be, what if like someone, like think about when people like Zebu and Simple were like 1v9. What if they'd like fucking injured their hand like the day before the RMR?
Yeah, that's
like,
what I mean.
They could have literally been like number two team in the world. They wouldn't be in the tournament, would they? By the way, go on then, Deb. What are your thoughts on this topic?
I was just, the thing is, I was one of the people who was a little bit critical of the RMRs for that reason. I was like, why did the best team go to this tournament and qualify? Yes. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Like Na'Vi, Spirit, G2, like these teams should be at the major. It should be like no questions asked. It should be a given. But now that we've lost it, I'm like, I might have actually preferred that world where there was a risk that one of these teams didn't make it. Because either way, it's a fucking cool story if they don't make it. Like, when G2 didn't make it, massive story. Like, you know, Nico with his emo as fuck tweets afterwards. Like, that shit is cool. It's interesting narrative. Whereas now, it's just dead. It's so boring. There's no interest. Like, we lose all the, like, Nine Pandas story. Obviously, they didn't get to play in the major. But we lose, like, the passion UAs and seeing this, like, footage of these guys going crazy and these iconic pictures. On the flip side, Astralis, like, you know, there's that, like, really sick picture. I can't remember. I think it was Bircho took it for HLTV. Where he's just like sat there looking at the icon for the Blast Major, missed it. Like, just like, we don't get any of that anymore with the MRQs. Like, I mean, even if we move them to LAN, and I think that should be the like absolute bare minimum we do moving forward is move them onto LAN, it's still not going to be the same because it's not the same like prestige of team.
I appreciate now, by the way, that if you're just a fucking video game player who plays in tournaments as your job, anytime you're in a physical LAN location now, you have to be incredibly careful. You have to have a poker face at all times because these fucking esports photographers, it's like they've all figured out Demps. Because the problem is, I can tell you, you must know this as someone who's a writer, the only people who know who these people's names are the people who write the articles, because when we use their photo, we have to put, like, you know, photo by, like, Adele or whatever, you know, Schneider or whatever her name is. So we're the only ones who know these people's names. Sadly, they don't get any fame even though they do these great shots. So it's like they've all figured out the meta is you can technically be, like, you know, esports photographer of the year, though. So the reason I know they're all going for those award steps is because, bro, if you're at an event, I'll give you an example. Say when G2 had Monacy and Nico, they obviously had those times where everyone would get hyped because they'd win a tournament. Then you think, could they win the major? And then they wouldn't do it, right? If you're Nico, the second you lose that major, you have to be on some fucking Daniel Day-Lewis method actor and or, like, poker face nothing. Because if you even dare look out of a window absentmindedly for a second, some esports photographer is crouched under a shadowy thing with the lightning coming over. So it looks like, you know, Mother Mary's grace is coming onto you as you stare with ennui into the distance, definitely thinking about, you know, why am I playing with Taz and Stacks? Meanwhile, you're just thinking, like, I wonder what time fucking I'm going to be home on Friday. I wonder if my girlfriend's ready. Like, you're not doing any of that. But these esports photographers are ruthless now, bro. Again, similarly, if you ever got kicked from a team, don't even look in their direction when they're in the venue, because that guy is at a 180 angle. Every he's time. Looking for that shot where you're looking over and it looks like he's looking back, like that famous Nico Harrison, Luka Doncic one Maui, where he's at the game and he's looking side as that. Like, they're all trying to get that shot at all times. And I'll tell you what, they're really good at it too, because as I've implied, at this point they can almost manufacture it. They just get the right shot, the right Photoshop shit, and all of a sudden they've nailed what you're thinking. They're literally reading your mind with the photography. But anyway, by the way though, they've done some great shots. So, like, I have to say, this exact scenario is what's generated a lot of the best ones. The famous one where Device was looking at Zonic and shit like that. Like, some of those are straight fire. Those are fucking back, Cadian and Heroic, etc. But yeah, to go to the topic overall, I think I actually know what you mean though, Demps, but I can expand this point. I'll do a synthesis, because I, as usual, my approach is always just accelerationist, just go to extreme the other way. So I'm with you. I actually did used to hate the fact that, because I'm actually a fan of sports, like, obviously examples of like snooker and tennis, etc. And if you know how robust the ranking systems are in these games, they're designed for exactly this purpose, because the last thing you ever want in a sport like that is like, oh, Roger Federer is ill, so he just didn't qualify to Wimbledon. But you have to understand, guys, if even though, like, sport, that's a real sport, you may as well, like, not hold the tournament at that point in time. Like, half the fans are coming to see him. It's like, well, the number one player, by the way, when people win, they're going to go, but he wasn't in the tournament. Like, it literally is a negative for everyone if that player doesn't play. So in all those sports, they're actually the opposite way. What they do is basically almost everyone qualifies from ranking, and then they have at the end, like, a few qualification spots directly, or they have like a wild card, etc. I actually think, like, what we need is this. We've basically already done something like that, but I don't think we've gone far enough. So there's two points I want to bring up here. One is the reason why I can't handle the fact that it's online and there's BO1s is because it just makes the results harder to swallow when it is like Game of Legion doesn't go through. Because here's my problem, right? You can laugh at Astralis and all their problems. Certainly they have had issues online. Game of Legion would murk, like, after teams that qualified from that fucking online qualifier. Like, it wouldn't even be a competition. The stupid thing is almost none of those teams are going to do anything at the major. They've already got their success now. Their success is qualifying to that stage of the major. major. Congrats, you're in a major, and it has a billion teams in a major now. Like, even though, by the way, being in a major used to mean you were top 16. Like, that actually used to mean something back in the day now. So, sadly, I do think that, like, we've gotten to the point where, I saw someone say this online, like, if you go look at the world rankings of Gamer Legion and Astralis, like, I don't think we've actually gone far enough with getting the rankings in there. Like, I know part of it's like the slots is what changes this too. Like, being the 12th best team in Europe doesn't help if you have to have a certain amount of America and Asia. I get that part, but it does look a bit weird. Like, Gamer Legion is the obvious one. That almost feels like they already have done enough in the circuit to get, like, at least the last fucking stage of the majors, surely. You know what I mean? The one with the 30 players. Can't they at least be at that? So, one, I would rather go the other way. But then I know what you mean, Demps. I'll give the olive branch back. But I agree. Valve and or whoever runs the major should make what is left, which I think should only be, like, you know, the last four or six teams or something. That part should be made into its own LAN that has the fanfare of the old RMR. Because, by the way, I am actually pretty sure you'll never get the same viewership as if you had Na'Vi and Spirit and FaZe, obviously, right? But I do think, for what you're saying, you will get people who want to watch the sort of reality TV show singing contest angle of, like, oh, he's made it through the round. Like, you'll get those people, like, people who want the Bad News Eagles type stories will tune in, and it's going to be 1,000 times better if it's online, like we're saying, and you get the iconic photo and people get to do the cool interview with James Banks and people tell their sob stories, like I'm saying, like on fucking Britain's Got Talent or whatever, about their disabled grandma that they're definitely playing for and raising all the money for, and she raised them since they were a wee bairn. And yeah, we all get that. We can all do all that jazz. Essentially, my point is, one, I actually want it to be more extreme. I want it to be where the only teams who don't make it are, like, the ones that were super borderline anyway. Like, I think Game Legion did enough. And then two, I just actually do think we could actually set up, literally, it sounds cynical, but make it like the last chance qualifier type thing. Call it something like that. Have it on LAN and treat it like it was the RMR. Because I'm with you. I do think that part. But it is weird. Except for those two teams, Gamer Legion and Astralis, which was mainly because people wanted to meme on them or feel sorry for Gamer Legion. There's no fanfare around this qualifier. Like, it actually is still, like, a mini RMR that basically has implications, by the way, for, like, stick them out. If you're Astralis, the joke is the whole org might have to fold because of this. But we didn't even get a moment, by the way, comparable to, like, the end of a match in a DreamHack Open 4 years ago. There's no LAN. There's nothing. It's just people in their bedrooms. Like, I'm with you. That part is mad. I actually couldn't... This is how I know in the scene we're all having a really hard time, like, updating to the new format. Because it's not until it comes and you see it play out, you realise, like, shit, yeah, there's no LAN anymore, is it? Like, what? Like, why did we not know this all year? So, no, I agree. It's gone too far. It's gone too far the other way, boys. Right,
BH should have been a mega story.
Oh, there's another good one.
BH should have been a mega story.
Yeah.
Should have been.
No, that would have been that would have been the Bad News Eagles type move of this RMR, for sure, yes. They even were primed with all the goodwill of the NPL thing and the head trick angle and the whole, by the way, the whole, like, the Launder style, like, NIP, your time on NIP does not count, fucking iconic line now. Right, Maui. Speaking of Game Legion, what is your bad point?
Yeah, I feel like we got baited pretty hard by this in the announcement of an announcement from Gamer Legion that they share what to me.
By the way, quick poll. Did everyone in this chat get baited? Because I'm normally pretty good, by the way. I never fall for a single April Fool's joke ever in esports. But I'll tell you what, when they said, the way they said it, it's just the way they phrased it, Demps. Like, the way they phrased it made it sound to me. Like, oh shit, they have to say something before the playoff match. So it must be that he's literally going like Liquid or someone. Like, and they got me, mate. They actually got me. I'm the idiot that believed Mbappe was going to Liverpool, Demps. I actually believed, I read the back page. I hadn't woken up yet, you know. Maui hadn't started grilling me about the game yet.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, I feel like my bad point being that for game it's almost like bad for Ash. So the point just being that Ash signed a never specified extension to Gamer Legion. And the reason, I think some people might be like, woohoo, Ash is still on Gamer Legion. Sure. And I get it. I understand that. But I'm kind of tired of seeing Ash on this team. Like, I'm kind of tired of seeing Ash just, you know, he's the GM slash coach, it seems like, of this roster. He seems to have a huge say on the moves of what goes on with this team. And I obviously respect Ash, and I respect what he's done with these Gamer Legion rosters. The recent failure at the MRQ doesn't quite really change that. I mean, it's a bit of a failure, of course, but I wanted to see Ash go somewhere else. I just wanted to see Ash go to, like, a G2, a Liquid, a team where they could have shaken things up with a different coach. I think even like a FaZe Clan would have been kind of pretty cool, given that I'm not really all too sure of, like, Neo got some praise behind the scenes from a lot of the people on FaZe when he was first on the roster, when they were winning a lot of games. Like, people got to remember, like in the beginning of CS2, FaZe Clan was nearly untouchable, or they would always make every grand final at the bare minimum. And Neil was the coach during that. And they did say a handful of good things about him, and including tactical praise. They were saying, like, he was helping their strats out. And maybe this is things they just told me, but I'm pretty sure they said it in other interviews too. But this is from 2023. Either way, to see Ash just stick on the Gamer Legion roster almost just kind of feels like it's almost like, I can't really give it like a, I guess the comparison for like broadcast talent would be like, you just only work CCTs and you gotta not, I gotta, if, what if I got a call to work like a Blast? But I was like, nah, I just like casting from my bedroom, you know, like, what, like, why? Like, what, I mean, like, but CCT just like gives you exclusivity. They give you like you get to cast from home, and it's like, I just don't really think, like, why didn't Ash take the step up here? Like, why was there not any other offers? Like, I'm kind of, that's what I'm saying is bad. I don't know. Did Liquid give him an offer? Did G2 give him an offer? Did FaZe give him an offer? I'm going to just go out and say probably not the offer that they wanted, or they would have given something to him, but it was marginally higher pay than what Gamer Legion gave him without all the control. Because I know that Ash does care about that a lot of his stature in the space is predicated on the fact that he gets to have a big say on who they get, who moves away from the team. So I understand, like, Kassad seemingly turned down the G2 coaching offer because he knew that he wasn't going to have any say on their roster moves. And if Petsa is making your roster moves and you're trying to put together a coaching resume, you're just going to get hamstrung by the fact that he gave you snacks, you know, like that's the reality of it. So like, I understand why Ash might have done it, but I still just think that this was the opportunity for him to make the leap and to show us, like, because I'll be real, like, Ash, you're never going to get into the GOAT. You're never even going to get close to sniffing a GOAT conversation for coach if you're on Gamer Legion. It's just never going to happen. So like, why not try to live to the fullest of your potential and join a team even through a bit of adversity? Because like, adversity, you know, the adversity being maybe you clash with the GM at times. I still think that's worth it in terms of projects like Gamer Legion should still be out there eventually if you do fail there because you've proven so much. But it just feels like he wants to stay in his comfort zone, which to me is kind of upsetting.
Okay. So basically, he has actually taken Ash re-signing with his beloved org as a negative hit. So what do you think on this angle?
I see where he's coming from. I think it's cool what he does with Gamer Legion, and I think he brings a lot of like talent through, which I think is interesting. You know, I think PR is like a massive talent for the future. I guess you can give Miles Academy the credit on that one, but anyway, just to focus on, I agree that Ash should be looking at a bigger project, right? Whether he got other offers or not, I don't know. I would be shocked, and I think the scene is sleeping, if nobody on a bigger team has at least inquired about Ash's availability. But like, I mean, look at who gets coaching jobs on the top teams. Like, it's kind of cooked, man. If Taz is getting the G2 job, and like, you know, Neo on FaZe, like, whether they're good coaches or not, I'm not even commenting on that. But there is a clear bias towards like ex-pros. There is a clear bias towards people.
Yeah, almost no coaching resume. Yeah, just being a player was their resume. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. There's a clear bias. Like, even, you know, Zipnik's getting like an assistant coach on Mouse or whatever. Like, that one makes more sense because it's assistant. But like, there's a clear bias here in like who is being brought on to coach. And I also think there is probably a bias among players with who they'll respect and who they'll listen to. And I wonder if that might be a consideration for Ash, is if he goes to a G2 or like, you know, let's say he goes to a FaZe, like, are those players going to listen to him and show him the same level of respect that he's getting in Gamer Legion from his players? No, like, guaranteed. No, he won't be. I understand where Mary's coming from of the, like, you know, you should be willing to kind of take on that adversity, because I think from at least what we've seen, Ash maybe has the potential to be, you know, up there in the GOAT conversation for coaches. On the flip side, his projects have always been to build from like kind of lesser building blocks and then install a system that is not super complicated, right? Like, none of the Gamer Legion teams that Ash has been in charge of have been like mega nuanced in the way they play. Like, they're always fairly straightforward, like fairly cookie cutter. So I wonder again if there is like some doubt in the back of his mind, like on whether he could go to, you know, is he going to, can he do what Blade does at Na'Vi, for example? Like, can he create a system like that? I don't know. I don't know if he thinks he could or not, but like, these are just some reasons potentially why you wouldn't take, you know, a bigger job. And I can understand both sides of the argument, like why you would want to stay a Gamer Legion and why, you know, maybe you should push yourself a little further and you know, look for a bigger project.
I'll pick up on that last point, actually, because I'll do the same thing. I'll address, like, why he probably didn't do it or why it hasn't happened, and then I'll do my thoughts on, like, because I agree with you, actually, Mike. I think this is, that's actually a bomber for me. When I actually saw him announced in the Game Legion, that actually made my heart sink. Like, because, by the way, he was already in that spot, but you hadn't hyped me that, like, something big was happening, because to me, like, I understand why for you it's big. Obviously, if you're Game Legion, by the way, it's amazing news. The problem is, everyone who's not Game Legion, I don't know how Ash feels about it. I think it's actually mildly underwhelming, because you hyped me that something huge was happening. So, on the point you're saying there, I actually do think that's an underrated point, mate. The real problem is this, as you might have seen by the fact everyone's picking over this G2 CEO thing about like, well, who did hire Stacks and Taz and who wanted them and who signed off on that, right? What you're going to learn, sadly, is yes, unfortunately, big name pro players sometimes have influence in that sense and sometimes have very silly criteria for recruiting people. Like, I can tell you one of the weirdest examples I've ever seen of this, because it'll show you how pro players think about people, is it's something about it is to do with when you like switch role or circumstances. I'll give you the best example ever, right? Back when they had the classic era of CSGO with those French teams of Titan with Existence, and you had the Envious squads with Happy, and you had all these different players out there. And famously, you had all those different really great French players that at one point in time played with Existence and then didn't want to play with him later, right? They all essentially had like sort of a rebellion against his system, because his system was the ultimate, like, it's like the ultimate male fantasy of like, he was like fucking Alexander the Great, mate. Or Napoleon. He just decided everything. And it was always his genius that like swept the battle field and won, and you were but a mere pawn or a battalion within his army. And unfortunately, you had people who themselves were amazing players who were like, no, I want to be like the guy who makes the mid-round call, or I want more of a loose style, and I want to like decide things. So basically, when these people, if you were asking them this, do you want to be in Existence's team and have him be your IGL, they'd all tell you no, the way he calls is outdated, like he hasn't got the right attitude. But if you said to them, right, what if he retired tomorrow, every one of them was like, oh, I'd take him as the coach immediately. Because what's weird is somehow when they weren't playing for him or competing with him, it's like they could all see like what he was the best at, which is he had like this encyclopedic knowledge of the strats and all the things in there. And they were thinking, I'll give you the classic analogy from sports and people know it. If you're a guy who's not a fan, I'll give Maui a fucking bone for once. If you're not a fan of the Warriors, I'll bet every time your team plays the Warriors, you go, oh, I fucking hate Raymond Green. It's a disgrace the way he's refereed. He's allowed to be so dirty, you know. But you'd fucking love it if he was on your team and it was a playoff game and he was fucking with their star player, or you get an extra elbow in when the court, you'd be loving that. You'd be all over it. So what essentially I'm getting to is, I think people see like the good of you and all the positives when you're not in like the situation like where personal feelings get involved. But the problem here is this: that would make sense in a way if he was doing some of that role in your team. The problem I have is, I agree, I think some of them are just going, you used to be a really great player, therefore I can respect you as my coach. It's like, sometimes that's going to be an overlap. Sometimes it might be, like, I think it's actually because there's an overlap. Like, I never saw you as a brilliant mind for the game, though. Like, surely the shit you were doing was, like, as a lurker, like, on your own. Like, that was, I don't even see the connection, but I get why to pro players, sadly, they respect that. And by the way, very quick black pill. Sadly, there's not many of them left. They're an almost extinct species, but there are still pros, by the way, who, when you're not that type of person, if you're like Ash from Game Legion, you made your whole thing from being, like, a coach and working through it, oh, they will be like, who the fuck are you to tell me how the game works? Which is like, look, luckily there's not many of those left, I will say, but there's still the odd one in tier one, I can tell you. So sadly, actually, people like Ash have a thousand time harder road than Blade. Because the difference is, again, they might, like, to use the same analogy, when they played Blade at the end in Flipside, they'd all be like, oh, some old fucking boomer IGL from years ago. They'd have him as their coach tomorrow. Every fucking pro in the scene would die to have this guy be their coach. It's why, actually, people who would do that thing are like, wow, Nico joined Falcons. You know, Nico's career wasn't like 1 year long. He spent his whole career dreaming of playing for fucking Sonic, you idiots. In fact, his whole shit now is probably like, I don't even care that they tell me the guy's washed. Can I just have him? Can I actually have him for a couple of years? See if I can get a couple of those chips and fucking rings. So I do think that angle is a real thing. Like, I do think essentially, even if you gave him the teams we want, like, I'm with you guys. I would have gone for a big dog. I wanted like G2 or Team Liquid or FaZe. Like, I'm talking about a team where, because here's the thing that's sad. if you take out the personal side of it and will players respect you, there's so many upsides this guy brings that are not. Like, the obvious one is he's basically making your buyouts cheaper because he's going to sign you young talent that actually can be a Malbs. Like, tomorrow, he's not even getting you the ones that one day. He can sign you the guy today that costs 250K that actually has, like, some crazy outside chance to be, like, the 19th best player next year on HL TV. Like, that's a thing he brings as well as being the coach. And to me, that's, like, coach mixed with GM mixed with scout. Actually, that's insane implied value. But the downside is some of those teams wouldn't ever activate that. They'd just sign big name players. And his problem then would be, that's the one thing we've never seen in his career, is what would he do if he had the big names? And it wasn't about what we all talk about, implementing the system, scouting them. What if it's the people who walk in, and because they're top pros themselves, they're just like, right, coach, what am I doing now to win this game? Like, that's a different pressure in a different team. So lastly, I'll go all the way back. The reason why, to me, it's a bummer too, Maui, is an obvious one. The guy's already banging his head against the glass ceiling. Like, he's just made the playoffs. Like, that's, by the way, you can't expect more than that. Like, with the rosters he's getting on paper, to even be one winning some of these group stage games is amazing. But then I think he's actually making these playoffs at, like, big tournaments. That is nuts. Even when he doesn't, by the way, he's, like, that far from being in the playoffs. Like, that's already about the best you could hope for. I don't know what more. This is where people treat being coaches and IGLs like you all have the same players or something. Like, he hasn't got Zivu, guys. Like, what do you want him to do? Like, even when I big up the PR guy, if PR joined fucking G2 tomorrow, none of you'd be good. He's going to be a top player in the world. You just be like, he's all right, I guess. He's good. So I think he's already doing amazing things. So unfortunately for me, I feel like now I'm just going to watch another year of that. And even worse, I'm already ready for the actual worst moment of all, guys, which is in like 3 months where someone signs the PR guy. And then when fucking, you know, Slen goes somewhere, and then eventually it's like time to, because that's the thing I always hate with the MSLs of the world and the Snappies, is when they then have to start the whole Sisyphean cycle again with the boulder at the bottom of the hill to fucking bomber, especially because remember, like you've seen with Alexi B, until you get the boulder almost to the top where it is now, that's the only moment you get this chance to do the step up and go to tier one. So you just you keep doing that cycle over and over again. So I'm with you, Maui. Unfortunately for me, I feel like he could have gone to a much bigger project. I also think he's had enough years in the scene now. It's not even like a big gamble, is it? I think it's about one of the best moves as an outsider you could do right now. It just seems like a slam dunk for some team. Mm-hmm. And then lastly, am I missing something? Because I'm with you. I actually get the vibe he just didn't get the offers. Like when I talked to him about a year ago, Maui, I got the idea his offers were more in the vein of, you know, the OGs and the Fanatics and the big clans of the world. So the premise there was, even though the name's bigger, like you're saying, I won't get them any more control. And also the teams aren't even that much better in the server. So at the time, that made sense. But lastly, I'll end on this note. This is where, when people celebrate moves like this, I always think, I almost wish I didn't know about the scene and I could just be a pleb. Because it's like when people would do that. I've said this joke a million times, but back in the day when they had Space Soldiers, people used to go, oh, why won't bloody Woxic join? And I used to go, because he doesn't want to make like $150 a month, you lunatic. Like, Andy wants to actually have a chance to like do something at the Major or something. Like, I know why for you, a Turkish fan, that would be great. And why for Eternal Fire, a Space Souls bag, it would be great. But it wouldn't be great for him. Guess what? It's way better for him to be in Mouse Sports. Like, that's just, everything's up for him. If you're actually a fan of his, I'd say maybe you should want him to be in Mouse Sports. All I'm going to say at the end is, if you're an Ash fan, I get why if you're a Game of Legion fan, but if you're an Ash fan, is Game of Legion really where you want this story to end? Isn't this supposed to be chapter one of a glorious, you know, next chapter where now, like we say, he's in G2 off ears and we can turn it all around? It kind of is, isn't it? So even though this is a hated angle, because by the way, sorry to Ash, actually, he's friend of the show. Like, you did just announce like you're 10 years more with this club. Maui has picked it as a literal bad point in the whole scene. Like, yeah, it's bad, actually. It's bad that you signed with him. I love it.
Right.
That's just who we are. You've got to understand. That's who we are. That's also how fair.
It's just, it's like, actually, I have the comparison in our space. It's just like, it's just like Tabson on Big. Like, we never really saw the true potential.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's Kayserot. Yeah. It's Kayserot on Furia. It's people that are choosing comfort over. Yes. I mean, if the thing is, if Ash comes out tomorrow and says, I actually had zero other offers.
True.
Well, then the bad point just shifts to, well, now I'm
where are the offers?
Where are the offers?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm mad either way. So whether it's your choice or
by the way,
everybody else.
I've even been, unlike 10 years ago, Thorin, really careful to not make the obvious joke of like the Xantara's one. Like, bro, he actually has problems with his back. Like, why are the simulation script writers so lazy? That's like an SNL joke about his career, for fuck's sake. Like, what's next? I guess Donk better watch out that he does preventative exercise. Give me a fucking break. That one kills me because it's the same with the Xantara's one. Yeah, you know, they're like, like, I'm really happy for Santaris that Eternal Fire is good. It's like, I think I'd rather he played in Vitality with Zero and won all the fucking tournaments, you lunatic. What are you talking about? Right, okay. My bad point is going to be, it doesn't have to be a big one, this one. I actually just want to see what people think. It's more like a food for thought bad point. So I saw this comment that people might have noticed now, where because Vitality has got this like match win streak. By the way, quick aside, whoever made that choice, I understand why you made it, but you have absolutely confused the fuck out of everyone by making it match win streak, not series win streak, not map win streak. So you notice already people were like, but I thought Liquids was 22. It was 22, best of three and best of five, but there was also a BO1 in there. Similarly, when they count that phase win streak, well, that included like a BO1 as well, I think, in like a tournament. And in fact, the phase one was even worse because before they used to count that online tournament, which is why you've got to check if it's a LAN streak or another one, right? So anyway, point is, Vitality, if they win this tournament, basically, is going to be like tied with Team Liquid or whatever for like second or something like that in the list. And then obviously the winner on the list of like biggest LAN streak ever in CSGO CS2 was obviously NIP because they won 60 matches in a row. So even though it was 87-0, some of those were BOX series, obviously. They used to win 2-0 every time. It was technically 60 matches, all types, BO1s, BO3s, yeah, everything in a row, right? So 60. So the point happened, right, on Twitter, right, remember, it's Vitality about to make this. Someone who's from the French scene, Ozstriker, who works, I believe, with like 3D Max in some capacity now, but he used to actually be like at the end of 1.6, he was like an in-game leader. And he's also worked, I think, as a coach for other teams in CSGO. And he's basically a guy who's been around the French CS scene a long time. He made a point, which was, the way I say it's from the French scene is because Vitality's the one about to do this record. What he essentially did is, because when you look at that record for NIP, it's like Wilt Chamberlain's famous record in basketball where he averaged 50 points in a season. Like essentially, it's like impossible for anyone to ever do that. So what they do for real in basketball is you tend to just like ignore those stats and just go, who's second best, right? That's, we can gun for that. Like, let's go after Michael Jordan's records or something, you know, like you make it like, well, that one's impossible. So Ozstriker's done a version of that where, cause Vitality, spoiler, is never going to get 60 matches in a row because that's basically impossible no matter what era you're playing. Ozstriker made a tweet where his framing, and this is what I'm going to pick as bad, his framing was sort of like the classic thing of like, yeah, but that's because it was the beginning of the game and, you know, it takes a while for the scene to get established and blah, blah, blah. And the reason why I wanted to bring this up is this is why I say it's food for thought. I've heard a lot of people make this as an immediate way to dismiss NIP's run. But what I don't get is this. It is good context. It is a decent point to say, for example, when the scene hasn't existed, the meta's not going to be as complicated. Early in CSGO, there weren't as many top teams. These are all good context. But what I don't get is this. Why is everyone using it to completely dismiss the record like it doesn't exist? Like, you do understand, even with all that included, to win 60 matches in a row is fucking mental. Remember what I just said there? Some of those matches is just them 2-0-ing every best of three they play. As in, it's not even, notice that the NIP one isn't even like, this is like maps in a row. That was the 87-0. Like, the series one means that, like, that, though what's funny is the series angle makes NIP's record sound not as impressive. The 87-0 maps in a row makes you realize they never even had a 2-1 map series. They never even had the one where the other team just nicks it 13-11, but you still smash them 13-6, 13-6. They didn't even have that. I mean, it was 15 rounds back then, but whatever. So my point is, one, I think it mega downplays it. And here's the last food for thought I want to give everyone who's listening to this right now that shows none of you really believe this shit, which is essentially, it's sort of like a nephew angle, Demps, of like, everything in my era now is the best, and everything from before, oh, here's the reason why it's like old and doesn't count. Here's why I know no one actually believes it. Because, bro, if you actually believe that the past was, you know, really played out and antiquated and that the scene hadn't been developed, bro, that Team Liquid streak that's number two is in 2019 when the games have been around for years, enormous contracts, eras. Why does no one go crazy on that Team Liquid one? Bro, by that logic, the Team Liquid record's fucking unbelievable. Like, 22, 23 matches in a row in 2019. Bro, that's after Astralis, like, Fnatic, like, that. If you really all put your money where your mouth is, you should be going crazy on the Team Liquid. They should essentially be reevaluated in history as an even better team, which no one does. So I want to know, essentially, it's a bit of a sort of like old man shouts at clouds, because I'm doing it as the opposite to the nephews, where they're like, well, I didn't see anything beyond 5 minutes ago, so it probably doesn't count or something. So what do you think of this angle? Because it's quite a popular one. All the old records always get pushed out of history and they don't matter and they're all nonsense and shit. What do you think on this, Debs? Where are we going?
I think it, like, obviously including context is important with any of these records. Like, it's obviously relevant to put it in its context that it was at the beginning of the scene, like you say. But also, so the scene is really young, the meta's not as developed, blah, blah, blah. That was also the same for NIP. Like, they're also figuring this shit out as they go along. Yes. They're also, like, playing a brand new game. So, like, the context works both ways, right? Like, yes, you can say in some senses it means their record is not as impressive. On the flip side, it makes it even more impressive because they didn't have a massive meta strat book to pull from where they can go through all these fucking demos and get all these sick strats like we have today. Like, in some ways, it actually works the other way. It makes it even more impressive that they were pioneering a brand new game and they didn't drop maps. They didn't make mistakes in that regard. Like, it actually makes it even more impressive. So I see both sides of the argument in the sense of, like, yes, context does matter and some records are not the same as others, like not all records are equal, but at the same time, like you say, people are minimizing it way too much. I think people do that thing of they're like, oh well, if you put, you know, 2013 whatever, 2012 NIP in the server today, they'd get smashed. Yes, of course they would. That's irrelevant. Yeah. Like, that doesn't matter. Yes. It's completely, has no bearing on the discussion that we're having right now. I think that's what people do, is like, they frame it incorrectly, basically, is what I think the problem is.
By the way, I'll give you actually one quick other reason that shows that people don't actually even believe those takes when they say them, Debs. They just say it, like, selectively. You know, when we all saw that recent thing they did, by the way, I've got a quick actually update for people who watched the past episode. You know the episode we had where it was pointed out that, I think it was the JW episode, mostly. It turns out JW was right. When Shiro was doing that, like, Pro League top five AWPers, he did say JW because he said JV, which is how they say it. And what happened was, I think Frere or someone misheard and just wrote JM. They, like, thought he said, they just heard J and then wrote JM, basically. Apparently, he did put, actually, JW, not JM, in his, like, top five. But anyway, the thing I was going to bring up was this. Don't the same fans also then laugh when, like, Monacy racks, like, 2019 Shiro or whatever as a meme? Like, you all laugh at that, but by your logic, he would be way better than Kenny S from 2015. It's years later. The game's the sad thing about this topic, guys, is no one actually ever believes it. They don't believe it, by the way, the same in Maui in basketball. You know when they all say that same shit, like, if you put Kawhi Leonard in a time machine, bro, LeBron did play against people from, like, the 2000s. Some of them still cooked him, mate. He wasn't like an alien and they were like a fucking, oh, like, fleeing from Godzilla. Like, they were just people playing basketball. What do you think of this topic, Maui? Because it's the interesting thing. You've sometimes veered towards that side. You've had a few times you've battled the Richards of the world about the old teams and stuff.
These discussions are really tough because I feel like they're never specific enough to...
True.
And I think if people use greater specificity, then there wouldn't really be arguments at all. So it always just ends up in, like...
Put it this way, it is rage bait, Maui. Like, put it this way, it's rage bait for both crowds. If you're the old head, you get to go, hey, show some bloody respect. He was a fucking kid. And then but then at the same time, if you're the old head, sometimes you're hating. Like, essentially for you, Chiro has to play like 15 years before he can ever be as good as Kenny S. You know what I mean? It goes the other way too far as well. They go too far, true.
Yeah, it's tough. Like, I mean, there's so many angles to go at it with. I mean, I feel like the comment that you're directly responding to, I saw it also about the 3D Max GM who was saying that the record doesn't really count because it's old or something like that and the scene wasn't developed. And yeah, like you've mentioned, providing context is important in these spaces. Like, we don't really consider Bill Russell to be the GOAT of basketball, even though he was completely dominant in the early stages of the NBA. But that's also because there was an ABA and an NBA where some of the players, I'm pretty sure, was, well,
I think that was
actually,
after zero, but fair enough.
It might have been later, but it was just like, we didn't, there wasn't the wealth of talent at that time.
No.
But a lot of the best people were playing CSGO at that time.
True.
It's just when NIP were playing, you know, the team that they ended up losing to, that that Virtus Pro lineup, that was like Doja and Angel and Adren. Like, those were good players.
Those top
at that
players,
time.
Yeah.
You know, so there were good people playing against them consistently. They just kept beating those good players. You know, so I feel like discrediting NIP also in turn discredits all of these other players that were playing at the time. And if you're not going to say that Doja, Angel, and Adren are legends, then, like, well, do you even want to keep records of history at all at this point? Or are you just, like, too focused on the Zoomer brain in the moment that you're not going to ever credit anybody other than who you saw the last 5 minutes on your screen? So I thought that comment was pretty asinine, truly. And if like, I get why he says it, because obviously the scenes weren't really, like, some people were still playing CS 1.6 during the time NIP was forming the record, so it didn't have all of the great players. Like, some people did take some time to switch on over, but I don't buy it. Like, I watched back a ton of the games that NIP won in that run. I even watched the game that they lost versus Virtus Pro, and that was more NIP actually throwing that game than Virtus Pro winning, in my opinion, because like Forrest was jumping out of window with an op on Mirage or Strike or whatever at the time. It was a little goofy. No, it was Mirage, but yeah. I just feel like the way that the scene is sort of discrediting history like that is just going to lead. It's a slippery slope of, okay, when do we consider anything the modern era anymore? Like, are we going to keep moving the goalposts on what is modern CS? Because you watch back like Liquid at their peak of powers, and you watch some of the teams. If you watch the teams that Liquid wasn't playing against play against each other, I haven't done that late. Actually, I watched like the Na'Vi Ent series in the semifinals of that of
Katowice.
Yeah, I rewatched that one kind of recently, and there are it just feels like there's like less going on in the game in general. But I'm still considering that the modern era of CS. You know, I'm not going to keep moving the goalposts forever. Be like, if you want to say a CS2 record versus CS:GO record, that's a fair claim. But I don't think that there's really, I don't think you need to discredit things that happened in the last 12 years, really. I don't know. Okay. That feels still relatively recent. I just I don't know. People in these discussions are always going to just be like what they think is acceptable and not acceptable. Then it's like, but who the hell are you for me to...
By the way, you know, technically, I'll use this as a clever way to advertise the last episode of Hot Take Point Made, because on the last episode of Hot Take Point Made, we did the thing where we're now letting people who subscribe to the Discord actually do their own hot takes, and we roast them. And one of them someone tried to do, as if to make the point, was they tried to do this. They tried to actually argue that Astralis was overrated because Astralis didn't play anyone good. By the way, the same thing that's happening right now with Vitality, where as Vitality dominates everyone, it means that suddenly no one's actually a real player, and therefore it doesn't count, but it becomes like a weird circular logic where no one can ever count unless you lose, in which case I'm going to be dominant. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, okay. So for example, like in these whole semantics discussions, someone on my stream yesterday was literally like, is the scene weaker now because Vitality, it's too top heavy? I was like, that doesn't make a scene weaker because Vitality's good. Like Mouse and Spirit are still very good teams.
Yeah, for sure.
And Falcons is a very good team.
Yeah.
It's just that Vitality is the best team right now. And I feel like that's also this backwards logic that people have, is just that it almost doesn't even make sense, because it's like Falcons just won a tournament without the best team. So clearly they're a good team, and now they're an even better team. It's just that, well, we did watch them play against Vitality at Melbourne, and they kind of choked that one actually, but they're still a good team. Like it doesn't make them bad or anything like that. You watch what they're doing, and it's like, I almost feel like what people that say the scene is bad need to do is like ground your argument for what is bad with hard statements of what you think constitutes bad play.
Yes,
if you are able to do that and outline that, then I can accept your argument that there is bad play afoot. Because if I'm watching Mouse construct around, I don't see really big flaws. Like I like what they're doing now is so optimized. And in terms of even mid-rounding, so many great ideas that I have to accept that they're good regardless of who their opponent is. Like they're taking all of these steps to minimize risk, to maximize their opportunities, and to come up with finishers that to me seem high percentage. I don't know like what makes them bad. If someone just wants to go with nebulous arguments like, but on stage they're bad. Yes. It's like, that's not even the narrative around that team.
No.
That narrative is gone.
They're only using almost like circumstantial arguments. They're not even saying the eye test is bad when they watch it. Because that was you, by the way. Actually, we didn't talk about it, but actually that Falcon Vitality series, it looks like, home 2-0. Bro, that was like mad winnable. Like that could easily have been three maps. That was really close, that one. Yeah, it was actually kind of got me hyped for when they meet in the future.
Yeah, no, I think they kind of choked because they were at the precipice of winning on Mirage, and then they just like almost didn't know how to handle it. Like
they had that flank on Inferno, like bro, that game could have been completely different. Yeah.
Oh, Majisk botched it. That's why Majisk is on my fraud watch, actually. that moment was so bad for him.
I appreciate Demps that what Maui operates is he doesn't just do like, oh, I'm gonna pick someone, are they a fraud? He just operates like an FBI most wanted list at all times. And if someone gets knocked off, like okay, someone gets moved over, now he just bumps up the next, like, now Zonic, you're okay for the moment. You just won a tournament. Magus, you're now public enemy number one. Wanted. Exactly, yeah. By the way, unironically, you should probably do that. You should actually do like Maui Snake's most wanted and do like a you know, have you seen this man return to the Polish scene for 10,000 fucking whatever?
That's actually true. No, no, actually, I need new branding. Content ideas. Yeah. That's going to be it. My top five fraud watch at the time. At all, like,
because by the way, I was actually right, Maui Snake. If you actually saw that recent comment, all those translated comments from Snacks, which I didn't plan to bring up on the show, but I'll bring it up now briefly. Basically, Snacks did a stream as he is wont to do, and then he did a bunch of comments in Polish, and people translated them. And even though people disputed the translations, I've seen a bunch of them, and they all seem fairly similar. And by the way, he wasn't saying anything that crazy, so I don't know why people are arguing the translation angle. But if you actually saw it, bro, we were right. It is, as I said, Snacks on one hand cares in the sense that he's like mildly put like a backhanded shot in there. But if you actually even read the specific way he phrased the shot, Maui, it's actually very charitable for a legendary player that's being shit on by people like me and you who aren't pro players, which is he didn't basically say like, fuck Maui Snake, no one ever listened to him. It's all that. He's basically sort of said like he understands that like it's like a thing to critique people and hate them. But he just said, and this is like the clever backhanded shot, is like it is easier to critique people and say who's shit than it is to make a very intelligent, like insightful point about the game. He didn't quite say it that way, but it's sort of the gist of what he meant. By the way, that is true. But I actually think if you read that really carefully, like a lawyer, Maui, he's actually sort of appealing to both sides there. He's sort of saying like, yeah, look, Maui Stick's just a guy like hating on me because I'm bad at work. Like, but he's also sort of pointing out like that is kind of like what we have to do on these shows. Like, I actually think in a weird way he gets it, Maui. I think he does get it, mate.
I always appreciate the players that just get it. I feel another NBA reference, or my first one on the show this time, it's like Chet Holmgren said something about like, yeah, like we can't control the narratives. All we can do is control our play. And I'm like, dude, thank you. That's so refreshing.
Like, I'll give you a cool one. This will blow your mind, right? When I actually did my reflections with him, after I did a reflection with Snacks, remember, like a couple of years ago when he was in Game Legion, believe it or not, after the interview, I think this is afterwards, I don't think it was in like the outro, I think he even said something like, after I finished, he was like, I'm actually surprised you never said that thing about the tweet with the cat. And I was like, what? And I remember he'd actually done a tweet years ago where he flamed me and said something like, you know, my cat knows more than you about CS or whatever, you know. By the way, because this was like 10 years ago, whatever, I did do the classic Thorin comeback of like, yeah, well, you would hang around a bunch of pussies or something. I did like the classic fucking, you know, you know who that, I was the SNL ghostwriter back then. I just did the obvious fucking low-hanging fruit.
Low-hanging fruit.
But it was good. Listen, I was, nobody fucking harvested low-hanging fruit like me, motherfucker. I was like Del Monte or something. I was straight fire, the juiciest shit of all time. So, but it was just bananas and fucking pineapples and all that jazz. You know, nothing crazy. You don't have to climb any branches. But no, I actually do think, for real, like, some players, I'm going to put, all right, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give Snacks the status if he gets to be in like the Flusher category, where look, I still do think all the criticisms are fine, obviously, but I actually, if you can sort of like wink, wink, I get it. I respect that in a way. I actually respect people who get the industry.
Yes, exactly. You know. Exactly. Yeah. No, I think a few people that have taken critique pretty well. Like, I mean, it's just like the opposite being like Naphany.
Sure.
I'm sorry. Just like, it's just if you can't handle it, then maybe tier one isn't.
The only good thing that came out of that was he inadvertently set up like Donna to actually come in, and then like Simple. We actually did get we won out of that one. We actually turned that to our advantage.
Oh yeah, that was good.
You know, we did
that
get that. One.
Also Mao's. I've talked to them about it. They handle it super well too.
Oh,
like Cyclone is like Cyclone's like, well, just got to prove some more people wrong then, I guess.
Okay.
You know.
By the way,
like,
I will say. This is an example where I do think over time you have to reevaluate narratives. In the past, if this had been before this year, Debs, I would actually also, in that list I gave of the potential Ash spots, I would have put Mouse there too. But I do think if you actually look what's happened this year, you have to give some of the credit to Cyclone, for fuck's sake. We all just said this was never going to work, and he's like in every bloody final, and the only team that ever beats him is fucking Vitality. So I have to at least assume he might be doing something there, give him that. Like, I'm not going to say he should be fired from his job without knowing what he's doing. Like, you earned that status for now, mate. This year, you got that one. You can have the top three vote at the end of the year. It's all good. Right, let's go to the ugly points now. So, Demps, we've teased it, so you knew it was coming at some point. Someone was going to bring up this fucking G2 interview. Come on, what is your ugly point?
Oh, my ugly point is just that whole interview, man. It was just a train wreck. Like, I'm going to preface this by saying I have mad respect for anyone who will come out and try and be transparent.
Oh, sure. Yes.
Like, put
absolutely.
Stuff out there for the public eye for us.
Oh, he could have said no comment on a bunch of these things. Absolutely, yes, yes.
The only thing he really no commented was like, what are the plans for the future? He was very like, we have lots of options. Apart from that, he actually gave a lot of insight and a lot of like honest commentary on G2, what's been going on with the roster, you know, all the shit that's been happening. Basically going back to like, you know, with Hooksy on the roster and, you know, getting rid of him. But I just like, he speaks well, he's relatively eloquent, he comes across as a nice guy, but like everything he was saying was just like face palm moment after another, like after face palm moment. Like, you know, what was he saying? He was saying, you know, oh, they got a bombshell dropped on them where three players wanted to leave at the same time, like Nico, Monacy and Hunter. This was around when Nico was first, like, talking about going to Falcons. I'm like, how do you get into a position where three of your players spring it on you that they want to leave? Like, I don't understand how you cannot anticipate at least some of this coming. He talks about feeling like Nico betrayed them when Nico first said he wanted to go to Falcons. And I'm like rolling my eyes, like, come on, brother. Like, this isn't, like, I don't know what you think this is. It's not a kids show. Like, it's esports. It's a results-based industry. He talks about underestimating the impact of Nico. Like, how? Like, how do you
I know
do
it's mad, isn't it?
Like, how can you underestimate the impact of Nico? I don't understand it. And then he talks about, you know, being unable to keep Monacy. And it's like anybody could have told you that if you lost Nico, you were losing Monacy. Like, at max a year down the line, Monacy was going to be gone if you let Nico go. And, like, I could go on and on and on. There were so many, like, points in this interview where it was like, what is going on behind the scenes at G2? Like, how do you get to this point? How do you fumble, like, generational talents like this and then get to a point where the roster is kind of in pieces and you're left, like, rebuilding from the ground up? Like, I just don't get it. I think, like, he probably thought after that, like, the interview went really well. I thought it was a train wreck, man.
I feel like the only, I mean, consistent, at least the only consistently higher up management figure that I find makes great interviews has been Jason Lake. And I feel like almost every other guy has been pretty bad. Like, I think of the Falcons ones too, yep, alongside this one, of just like, you guys are just really digging your own.
By the way, every Zonic interview, doesn't he just kill himself every time he opens his mouth? You know?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I think the temptation to go on one of the biggest podcasts in the space for Counter-Strike is too much for some of these guys, and everybody wants their own little moment of glory or moment in the spotlight.
I think also, just quickly, a podcast that you know is not going to be too hard.
Yes.
Like, you know you're not going to
tell. Yeah, that too.
Yes.
Yeah. That, like, they usually, it's pretty softball over there, and that's fine. It gets the big guests going. But then he just kind of, some of the lines in this one were, oh, man. I mean,
the amount of quotables is actually unbelievable. It's fucking insane how many quotables there are.
Yeah, I mean, the focus for me was just the Taz stuff. And I feel like there was just so many things said in this that people kind of, like, the snack slash Taz defenders now have to backtrack on the things that we were saying earlier. I was definitely saying earlier about the hires of Taz and everything. And I was like, calling for, I was just, like, it was pretty obvious, just Taz was like more of a cheerleader than anything. And I also think that the one thing, like, when I read through between all the lines here is that, you know, at the end of last year, Nico was upset that Taz wasn't in the three nominations for Coach of the Year. And I just feel like if you're always like trying to prop up your guy, but then the G2 CEO also says he was just hired as a cheerleader, it's kind of hard for me to then in the future be like, yeah, Nico, like, I'm going to trust anything you say about any of your coworkers, including Zonic, because who he's been propping up lately. Like, I get it. Nico has his team's back. Like, I want a guy like Nico on my
Maui,
team
that's
for a variety,
like,
of reasons.
You know, when there's a bizarre thing, we're not from the world of women, so we don't have to know how this works, but there's a thing with how female social spaces work, where if one of them does, like, an Instagram picture where they're looking really glammed up, they'll go, oh, wow, hey, Slay Queen, you look beautiful. And they automatically always just reply, you look beautiful too, even though it's like, but I'm the one, I haven't even put a picture out, and two, like, that's not true in the same way. And that's like Nico doing that, mate. He's just going, and you're great too, Taz, you as well. It's not just, oh, am I opener of the year candidate? It's neat, it's honestly the opener. You could be coach too, you know, Taz. I don't even know. But it's weird, under a lie detector, I don't believe he would pass the lie detector, Maui. I just don't believe it. Come on.
Yeah.
Does anyone really think that he thinks Taz was top three in the world? Come on. Really?
Yeah, I know.
I hope not.
He was top three in G2, which is the gag. There you go. That's the low hanging fruit. The low hanging fruit again, but I've harvested it nonetheless. Okay. Okay. By the way, I will say, we won't go through the whole thing, because I will say, not only, first of all, I even told Maui this before I came on. Everyone who has a YouTube channel, you should literally be doing a review / react session to this interview, because it is gold dust, homie. It's just, there. Like I said, you can't even name all the hits. Like this guy, you would have one of these lines that would have been said accidentally by someone else and taken out of context. He says all of these lines in context. The context makes them worse. The more he talks, the worse it gets. And I agree with you, Demps. Look, on the one hand, I don't want to scare people like this off. God bless a CEO of a giant org that could literally say to all of us, by the way, I answer to like my shareholders and sponsors, fuck you, I don't care what you think. No comment, no comment, no comment, lol, let's see, and thanks for the interview. Like, they could come out and give us nothing to work with. And if he did, by the way, sadly, it would have been better for him. But in attempting to be transparent, he's been too transparent, and we've actually seen through him is the problem. Because the amount, some of these quotables make this guy, put it this way, my conclusion at the end of this goes like this. You can pick which it is. He's either incompetent at PR, which makes him a moron, by the way, for going on a show like this and attempting to talk this way, or he's actually incompetent at his job as CEO and the trickle down of who he's delegated to, and that's why G2's a mess in CS in the game. So you can pick which it is, but unfortunately, I feel like it almost has to be one of those two, if not a blend of column A and column B. Because the problem is, I have a backstory that other people might not know, so I'll bleed over with another piece of cross-promotion, just like I referenced Hot Take Point Made. We have a show, it's actually on like the League of Legends channel, I think. I can't remember if it's on the CS1 or the League of Legends. I think it's on the CS1 maybe, actually. I could be wrong on that. It's an industry show called The Four Horsemen, and it's me, Monte Cristo, Richard Lewis, and then the idea is The Fourth Horseman is a guest each time. And what we do is, essentially, it's like we're like the saviours of esports, and we're sort of like diagnosing what's wrong in the scene. And it's usually like industry topics, like financial things. So we had this guy on as a guest not that long ago, maybe like 2 months ago or something. And it was mainly, I will say, more from a League of Legends bent, because G2 is way bigger in League of Legends, obviously, in like the Kings of Europe and stuff. But this guy, it was, if you don't know, it wasn't like HLTV confirmed Demps, because I was on that show. And I'll tell you what, I have the most low tolerance for bullshit of maybe anyone ever in esports. Not least because I've been around a long, long time. So I get really jaded by like corporate speak. Like if you notice, one thing I think about my content, I put a lot of time into it that I'm pretty good at is I'm really good at breaking down like press releases and reading between the lines. Or if someone uses a euphemism, I'll give you an example. When Heroic did the signing of all those Sangal players, but then they also signed the Nilo guy, and they were like, you will fight your way into the line. Like, that's just saying sorry to one of you three Sangal guys. This is that scene from The Dark Knight where he breaks the pool cue in half and says, we're having tryouts. Like, one of you isn't going to make it. We just signed 3 of you because we had two for the spot. But guess what? One of you is definitely not, because we've already literally signed your replacement. And essentially, all we're counting down to is, when are we legally allowed to bring him in instead of you? So my issue is, like, I can always see when people are bullshitting. And this guy, here's the saddest thing, Demps. What he doesn't know is how different CS is and how raw the fans are. Because in League, by the way, here's what's going to blow your mind. When we had him on this show, I give him maybe the first half an hour, 45 minutes. I sort of tolerate his bullshit. I say my part, he says his part. But then eventually, I even start trying to like battle back against him, trying to like control the narrative of the conversation or give like what I think are just bullshit answers. And I can tell you, it went really badly in League, bro. If you go read the comments on my own channel, my fucking company, it's all people hating on me and thinking I'm being mean and rude to this guy. Because in League, they are a bit more sort of like, they're a bit more childish. They just believe what, like, if so, the joke is, but he said it is going, you know, like that sort of fucking thinking. Yeah. The difference in CS is this. This guy, you can tell, doesn't know the CS crowd. Because I think he actually thought going on this show would do the opposite. I think he thought this would put all these topics to bed. And because I agree with you, by the way, he comes off very amiable. And he actually seems like quite a sort of like a chill guy. And by the way, his accent, if you're English, if you don't know, by the way, spoiler, but English people just like French accents. They sound really suave to us. In the same way as if you're some dumbass American yank like Maui on his fucking tractor, then I sound like the King of England, don't I? With a top hat on and a monocle on. I don't, but you get the stereotype. So in the same way, bizarrely, we get like the boosts where people would even say about me back in the day, like, he's not even that funny, it's just his accent. And I'm like, bro, the joke is, if you know where I come from in the UK, I sound like I should be collecting a fucking like unemployment check with my accent, you idiot. Like, I don't have the down fucking the
top center,
yeah, I haven't got the fucking Hugh Grant accent, but sadly to an American they think I do because they don't know the difference. So anyway, I thought this guy thought he nailed it. I'm with you, Debs. I think he actually ended that call like, nailed it. And it's like, bro, right now everyone in CS already thinks all those people are frauds. Taz, fucking Petter, the Hooksy, all the people that were involved that they didn't like the moves from. And then also, right now, they all know G2's going nowhere and you've let all your generational talents go. So right now, the last thing they want to hear is the way he... like, essentially, the defense he played for the moves made him look like an idiot in G2. Like, put it this way, Demps, when you're saying that thing about the Nico one, he actually doubled down on the stupid take. Remember, he did a weird interview like a few months before Nico did go with Hitchell TV, where it was like, almost the gist was like, we could have kept Nico, but we don't need him almost. Like, that was like the vibe, wasn't it?
It was a French interview he'd done, a French
language right.
interview, and it was translated. But yeah, he actually addressed that on Confirmed and said that he fucked up by saying that.
Oh, right.
He said it was like a mistake to have said it.
Because he definitely did, but the problem is it's all well and good saying that when the horse has bolted, man. It's already out the door winning tournaments, you know.
I'm
just beat you in a tournament.
And he says Confirmed was a mistake.
Right. True. No, that's it. That's a good joke, but he actually should do that at this point in time.
Yeah,
no.
Just walk it back.
And then also, the Taz one is actually some of the worst PR I have ever seen in the history of esports. Because you have literally taken... This is where, like, I can tell you, Maui, he doesn't even know what haters think about Taz. Because it's almost like he just came on the show and went, Maui Snake was right. That's the opposite of what you ever want to be doing. You want to, one, you want that to, if it's true that Taz is only a vibes only coach, you let that go to the grave with you, brother. You don't ever tell anyone you actually did that. I wouldn't let that escape under torturing Guantanamo Bay, mate, because that destroys your whole credibility. You're hiring coaches based on vibes. That's even the literal meme about Nexa, you cretin. It means you don't even know the discussion about your own team, because as I say, you're playing into the, by the way, this is nightmare fuel if you're a G2 fan. It's like Snacks must wake up and go, I've just tried to be like generous to the mouse stick guy. Now my own CEO guy's like agreeing with this fucker. Like, so you've already inted it completely on the Snacks one, on the Taz one. And then also the idea that, like, it's the way that they handle the Nico and the Ronzi one, I can't tolerate, bro. Because here, I made this point on a few recent episodes, but it hasn't fully sunk in for other people. This is what you need to ask yourself about G2. It's not about why did Nico leave. What you need to ask yourself is this, right? Think about who Nico and Monacy represent. Nico is the, like, all-time great player, still close to the peak of his powers, who's probably got a year or two left in his thing, right? The analogy here would be like Mohamed Salah or something in football, right? That player is easy to re-sign because they're still at the peak of their powers. You know you're going to get the last end of it, right? That's a slam dunk to sign. The other slam dunk player in the scene is the young player entering superstardom, 19 years old, could have the 10 years himself of being an old. These are the two players that are the most obvious slam dunks to sign and build your whole, like, put it this way. Normally I'd go even the other way and say, teams actually would do a team liquor and twist and just be like, you basically run the team, mate. Who do you want? Who do we get? What do we need? Basically, you tell me what it takes to make it so on the flow chart, you never leave my org and I always have you. Instead, you have literally let both these guys go. Now, true, the Monacy one, you bizarrely got millions at the end for it and he kind of like financially won on that one. But even so, the idea that a 19-year-old superstar entering his prime could be HLTV top three for the next 10 years isn't going to be in your org. The real question is this. Why does no one want to play in G2? Like, bro, G2, if you even went and asked people 2 years ago, would be considered the number one esports org in the world. Definitely in the West, brother, if we're ignoring like Koreans and shit. Like, this was the number one place, like, essentially you'd want to attach your brand to. And it should be the other way around, by the way. It should be that once you're Nico and Monacy, you don't have to ever worry about roster moves because you're already there. You just sit in your seat, press the mouse, and you know that the org will competently put people around you. By the way, here's the real black pill Falcons haters, like Falcons is doing right now. Nico now never has to worry about his roster. He has to just sit there and worry about headshotting people. And he knows eventually, no matter how bad the person in seat 4 and 5 is, they will transform into like Yimfat and fucking Carrigan or something. Like, you know what I mean? That's real. That's the world. And by the way, that is what should have been the case for Nico Monacy though. So I'll just end on that. That's, I agree with you. It's definitely ugly. Because I actually agree with, like, I actually think it could have been good. And I actually do love the idea someone tried to like be truthful in a way a politician never would in the modern day, etc. Now you would just get the no comment. But I do think it's an actual nightmare, the results of this. Like, I'm not even joking, Debs. I actually couldn't satirize this. It's so bad. Like, my jokes wouldn't hit. They wouldn't be as like overtly on the nose as his own comments were, like, inting this interview. It's crazy how bad it is, bro. Like, genuinely, just as a hate watch, you've got to watch it, guys. Like, watch the whole segment. It's so good. You got to watch it.
The best part is that you know that it's like you just can't satirize it, is because the first thing he said when defending Taz was, yeah, but he's a great human being.
Oh, God.
Didn't say he's a great coach. Didn't say, just went, yeah, oh, I love him. He's a great human being. I was like, oh my God, brother, you are the meme. There is no need to meme on you because you are the meme.
But if Debs, I've done too much low hanging fruit before, here's where I totally redeem myself and win everyone back over to the wit and panache that only Thorin can bring. Because it's even worse. His branding is even worse than we realize, because his alias, Debs, is Stilgar, and he can't even even recognise a generational talent perform that could transform the whole space? Did you even read the book, Paul? Did you even read the book? Anyway, well, not that shit movie. The actual, no, Chanel Gabe. By the way, the irony of that is, I mean, he wasn't there, to be fair, it was Carlos. But they actually had Alexi B in their team and they let him go. Because that's one thing, by the way. I mean, I'm going to say that, G2. G2, you're now in the NIP category. You know how in NIP, it's not, the ultimate crime wasn't even the players they signed. It's that they didn't do it in the right order. So I always tell people, bro, they had Alexi B, Device, Brolan, and that's fucking, you're cooking right there. Like, you've got some unbelievable players there. The problem is, you never had them all at the same time. You never put them in a team and made it work. You had Alexi B, Nico, and Monacy, and then like 3 years later, you've got none of them. Like, how did you manage that? Like, bro, you are like, yeah, the kid, is the last analogy. You are the kid who went to school that first day with the Pokemon cards, and you didn't know that how negotiations worked, and you left home with the cheapest Pokemon cards, no foils, and those kids fucking destroyed you on some like margin call / 2008 financial crisis level scam shit where they were like, oh, you want this one here? And they did you dirty, mate. How have you ended up with nothing at the end of all that? Because that's the other thing. If you noticed how, and this is what this guy ultimately failed, the last point I'll make is this. The ultimate failure of G2 is I don't even see anyone like speculating where they can go. In fact, he himself even hints this detail, Demps, because he puts in this throwaway comment about how, of course, they're not going to sign G2 Simple. And I want to tell him, bro, that's how I know you don't know the community sentiment. Right now, the community expectations for your team are so low that nobody thinks a top player's joining, that most of your own fans would snap call a Simple comeback just for the hype alone, bro. Like, they don't even have to know it would work. Like, that just feels like, hey, maybe that could change things. That could kind of throw a wrench in there. Right now, everyone just feels, I think most people, like, G2's just going to be like the 12th best team or something. Like, they're going to be nothing now. It's a bummer.
It is a bummer.
Moving on, Maui.
Yeah. Let's
what's your ugly going to be?
So my ugly point is that I feel like, despite all of the great uses of academy rosters in recent memory, mostly Mao's NXT, but there's been a couple other success stories across the board, we're not really getting any inclination that Spirit Academy or Navi Jr. is going to have any say on their main rosters in terms of just like,
oh right,
okay. Navi's in a slump right now, obviously, and they've got a talent in Mikaze that feels like, I don't know why this guy isn't getting a shot also.
Right.
And there's time now, and I think this is just a weird oversight in some of these orgs who have done such a great job. Like Spirit Academy, obviously, you know, they got Donk and Zontix from their academy team. And now it's just the perfect time to try these guys out. You know, you have three, arguably four tournaments. Actually, it's four tournaments. It's everything that was after Bucharest, really. Melbourne, Rivals, Astana, Dallas, all of these events, you could have used your academy players. And I'm talking about Kyosuke on Spirit Academy, and I'm talking about Mikaze on Navi Jr. I don't know why Navi or Spirit, in positions where they find themselves clearly behind Vitality, look at trying one of those guys out in this interim. And that's not to say like you need to immediately cut Magix or Ima or whatever. It doesn't matter for one of these guys. It's just, you have these teams, I'm sure they have clauses for using their academy players in certain circumstances and benching their players too for like a month. What, just try it. Just try it out. Like I'm kind of scratching my head. And the reason I just put this as ugly is like, this isn't maybe like the most obvious thing on the table. So it's not just an outright bad. It's just, I don't know why if I'm one of these organizations that I'm not looking at like for Astana, I don't know why for Astana you wouldn't try Kyosuke. And if you're Navi, try Mikaze. Like, it's the perfect tournament. It's a high prize pool. It's got a lot of the top teams at it. It doesn't actually have Vitality. It doesn't actually have Mao's at it. But if you can beat the rest of the teams with those guys, maybe it's worth considering them for the upcoming Austin Major, because as it stands in the current form that both of those teams are in, they're not beating Vitality. They're not even really beating Mao's for that matter. So I don't get why there's no rumblings of them using these players.
What do you think, Debs?
Yeah, I'm super on board. It feels like some of these teams see their academy projects as more of like a money generator than actually generating talent for themselves to then go and use. Like you say, Mikaze, Kyosuke, two primarily obvious examples. And it feels like even in terms of like PR and in terms of kind of like internal relations within your team, it's such a slam dunk to say, hey, look, you know, we're not necessarily kicking you. You know, you don't need to freak out, but we're going to pop you on a bench for a month. Use this guy. We want to get him experience. We want to invest in this guy. Like, it even makes sense from that point where you can't like necessarily bring in someone external and bench someone for a month. Like, that's just not going to work. They're never going to come back to the team and, you know, be happy. But you could probably do it in this scenario, or run like a six-man roster for a bit, you know, be like, ah, we'll use him for like a map or two at Astana or whatever, if you want to, again, kind of massage the egos of the players on your team and you don't want to like blow your team up. So yeah, I don't get it either. I really don't get it. Like, it seems to make sense, particularly less so Spirit. I can understand why Spirit is sticking rather than twisting because of the major win and because last year they did the same thing. They had troughs, but then they had peaks at the right times. So I get why Spirit are doing it. But with Na'Vi, like in current form, Na'Vi would have to scrape into the playoffs of the major on current form. So I don't understand why they wouldn't do it when they have literally a ready-made player for some of their problems as well. Like, it answers some of the problems on their team, like, explicitly. This guy is an aggressive space-taking rifler. One of Na'Vi's big issues is their openings, particularly on T-side, dropped off massively compared to last year. They have, like, a ready-made solution. Like, why aren't you at least giving it a go?
No, I'm with you. I actually agree with what you said there as well, Demps. I actually think what most teams look at their academy squad for is, except Mouse, because they're obviously the exception that proves the rule, because they directly have taken players and had all the success. Every other team uses it as like a way to offset the costs of the main team, because the logic is, what you're doing is, it's like you're flipping players. What you're doing is you're getting a player for cheap that, as you know, hasn't yet made it to the top. You're hoping that by showcasing him in your team and getting him into like tier two tournaments, people see he has quality. And then what happens is someone else, essentially one of your rivals, comes and says, here's 100k buyout or 50k buyout or whatever it costs, can I have him? And that 100k then you offset against your salaries for the main team, your buyouts. But I would say the other end, the model, instead of like flipping a player and doubling his value, is I actually think you can also consider players on your academy team like lottery tickets for your team, like we're saying. Like, one thing I've learned from these rosters is Mouse really is some sort of like alien project. Like, every other project I don't think actually has like that many insane talents in the squad. Astralis, Na'Vi. Like, Mouse is a rare one where it seems like they've had a couple of generations of them where almost every player could be like a true tier one player. I think in most of these teams, what it is it's more like you get one or two players who are tier one. Your job as the org is just identify which it is. And then this is the key thing. Like Maui's saying, if it's someone who actually would make sense to try for your team, why not? Because I would even say the obvious analogy is, if you didn't have an academy squad, you would look at someone like Spirits Academy and go, hey, maybe I should consider this guy. So, but somehow when it's your team, you often don't do that. You do think of it as like, they're still below me down here and I'll only sell to other teams, which I do think is a mistake. And I think Na'Vi's a perfect example, by the way, because they're obviously in such bad individual form. They already were a messy roster anyway, because there's no like national core to it. It's already like this experimental squad of different players and all the rest of it. And aside from the success of last year, which, by the way, guys, we're almost in fucking May, that has to eventually like go over the horizon, as it were, and be forgotten about. We can't live off that seven finals run anymore, if especially because they did badly at the major at the end of the year. Like, that they shouldn't have even entered this year with that much of a leeway. I think you get part of the first season and you haven't made the playoffs now in this tournament. So for me, the alarm bells are already ringing. So I'm with you. I'd at least gamble for now, because quite frankly, at the moment, I'm with you. The best case scenario isn't even that good for the major. So why not just give it a gamble? Because if it doesn't work either way, you're probably doing a roster move anyway, surely. Surely the move, whether a player you brought up and tested was good or not, is never go back to the original five. Like, that looks like it is cooked. But spoiler, I was going to have that as my ugly point, Na'Vi. I'll switch it up now, but it would have just been that, because everything about the team, like all markers are pointing down right now, every single one, map pool, player strength, style, like right now everyone wants to, in fact they've even entered the phase territory where it's just, who are you picking? That's the problem. It's who am I replacing? There's not even an obvious one. You know, normally in teams that fail, you have the one player that everyone points at as like, he's the skip. There isn't even one in this team. Like, you might laugh about Wonderfool or whatever. That's more like a fucking H on TV theme at this point in time. They used to say that when he was winning the tournaments. Like, the actual discussion of who they should kick, the joke is it's only like Bits got like the Naf fucking status of like, he just can't be kicked because he's the Na'Vi guy. But everyone else, I can tell you, is on. But people actually do even want Lexi B fired. Like, everyone else is on the roster. So they could all be kicked in theory. So I'm with you. I would at least have, if you're not going to make a big buyout and actually try like wrecking the whole scene with like a big roster move that changes the space, why not at least test the guy out? Because I'm with you, especially by the way, a start is even something of like a regional tournament for people from that area. Like if you're taking in like a Ukrainian player or something, like that's going to be more comfortable than going like Rio or some shit like that. So it's even sort of like not a bad like chill vibe place to go. And spoiler, PGLs don't have all the best teams anyway, do they? So why not just try it at that one? It's not the same as this tournament now where it has all the best squads. So no, I'm with you. I think that's a good point. I think it's actually a pretty good point. And also the one on the Spirit one, that one's going to be the weirdest ever, because I actually have to say my problem is people do act like it's a slam dunk. He is like the next Donk, which not, you have to understand there's only one Donk. So like he might be a really good player. Maybe he's going to be the next Axel or something. So we'll see on that. But like my issue is I am scared that they are themselves just going to sell that player to another team and then that player's going to wreck their team and then they're going to be the ones doing like the G2 to Falcons now of like, I've just lost to the player I sold. Like, I am scared Spirit's going to do that, mate, and just keep resting on their laurels with his wrong roster. Even though they are really good, as I said before, Tony, I'm only niggling because they're not number one. Just saying it because they're not beating Vitality, are they? Right, let's go to the last point. I'll pivot on this because I know what I can pivot to as a last point. It's going to be this. By the way, the ugly category, in my opinion, is basically just how does the person who picked the point frame it as ugly more usually than the point. So the way I'm going to frame this specifically is everyone's just seen all these really bizarre moves that are happening to Furia, where like Yekindar's standing in, which is like, what? And then also like they brought in this like fucking Melodia guy or whatever the fuck from like Kazakhstan or something. So they've done these moves that are just like, what? Because remember, Furia, we all thought the rules to Furia were stuff like you have to be Brazilian, you have to speak Portuguese. It was implied because people kiss right, there may have to be like the cultural aspect that, you know, you get Brazilian culture, which by the way, these two players don't fit at all. Like, they're not even in the archetype. So I want my ugly point not to be those players joining specifically. It's that, just like I said about G2, bro, no one says this, I think because they're just like so popular, but within the Brazilian scene, it's a bit like what I just said about G2. There's this weird thing where people don't want to join Furia. I'm telling you, like, put it this way, without naming names, I've gone out there on a few of the players I rate in the Brazilian scene and I've messaged some of the stars and the IGLs and said like, I hope one day to see you in Furia. And let's just say some of the responses were sort of like, haha, like not really, but this is my gist of it, like, haha, fat chance, or like, why would you wish that upon me? That was almost like the vibe. Like, it was almost implied to me like they might go to other teams and maybe they'll make a super team elsewhere, Brazilian team. It won't be in Furia though. Like, people just don't like this org for some reason. And then lastly, it just makes the whole, like, bro, Maui, we just spent a whole year all coping and coming to terms, like Tabson and Big, with like the, okay, maybe K. Serato has to only play in Brazilian teams. So let's stop every episode asking for him to join FaZe or Liquid or whatever and say, right, we accept that he has to be. No, this undercuts all of that. This would be like if tomorrow, after we've all said, okay, Zantares, I'd rather you play for FaZe Clan and win everything personally, but I get you want to play in the Turkish team. If tomorrow they bring Smooy in, then that just invalidates the whole thing, doesn't it? Like, what are we even doing at this point in time? What am I giving all that up for? I'm not even getting like the fucking fantasy that it's all about being Turkish. So that's why I say it's ugly, because bro, the implications of this move are crazier than the names being listed. What do you think, Demps?
Yeah, I agree. It's like you're getting the worst of all worlds. You know, it's like now we don't have like the number one Brazilian national team, which, you know, get on the launders hype and get on the racist hype. Like, it is cool having like single nationality teams out there with unique styles and unique identities. Sure. I like that. We're not getting that anymore. K. Serato still not gone to a good team. Like, spoiler, this Fury is not going to be good. I don't care how optimistic you are. This Fury is not going to be good. There's so many like problems with language and culture. And you're getting a Yekindar who hasn't been good for like at least a year. At least a year. Yeah, I don't know. We're like, what are we doing here? Like, Fury have said for a little while that they, I can't remember how long ago it was now, but their CEO did do some sort of interview or whatever, and he said he thought he saw the future of Furia, like, to create a competitive team, was it can't be all Brazilian.
Right. I think I saw something like that, yeah, a few months ago, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. I don't even think that's necessarily talking about the talent pool. I think that's talking about buyouts.
Right.
And, like an average Brazilian player is, like, 200K buyout flat.
Right.
Like tier yeah. two Brazilian player is, like, the buyouts are fucking mental in Brazil. So you can't get all of the best players on one team. Like, you break the bank to get one good player. And like with Skulls, Skulls paid some of his own buyout to get out of pain, like to go to Liquid, for example. Like, that's just how it is in Brazil for some reason. The buyouts are mental. But if you were going to go international, like, the timing of it is weird. Like, I don't think this particularly raises their ceiling for the major, and I think it probably lowers their floor. This Molody, whatever, this guy seems pretty good from what I've heard, but again, it's a massive punt. It's bizarre. And the Yekindar just, to me, seems like we're just getting him in to make this Molody guy feel comfortable because he speaks the same language. Like, that's what it seems to me. I don't know. It just makes no sense. It seems hella ugly. I don't think anybody wins. Like, yeah.
I've also just realised this just makes Furia the fucking Team Liquid sloppy seconds team. You've had what, fucking Yekindar, Fallen, which, fucking Skulls. Give me a break.
You know what's even worse about when's
Patsy
point
joining?
Is that the worst part about it being the Liquid sloppy seconds is that Caserato was supposed to join Liquid at one point. But he couldn't because he can't leave the Brazilian premier organization.
Sure.
And now he gets a team that is just picking up the scraps from Liquid. And he could have actually just been on Liquid and just skipped three steps here. It's just ridiculous. Like, I feel like, I mean, we're watching now one of the players like Tabson, who decided to just stick with his organization because he came up with them. He wants to just, like, it seems like he wants to be a lifer on Furia. And the reason he wanted to do that seemed like it was because of certain parameters that it was going to be Brazilian, it was going to speak Portuguese. And now when you throw that away, it's like, why didn't Caserato, can Caserato explain to us why he didn't leave Furia without retconning the reasons that he didn't leave them in the past?
He's basically done the Brawlan, hasn't he, Maui? Where I've told you, the joke is, Brawlan officially had to say, I don't want to speak English. But what he really meant was, I don't want to speak to the English players Smooya anymore, thank you. Hence why, like, later he was totally fine speaking English again. And basically admitted as much as well, but just down the line.
Yeah, I'm pretty much I don't actually think that the Caserato Yuri duo is as washed as some people out there. I don't know. I've seen some comments mostly about Yuri, but it's just this team could be, with that duo, a top 10 team with no shred of doubt in my eyes. Like, they're better than those two should be better than, like, a Flit Fame duo in my eyes. I think Caserato and Yuri could be better than them. It's just that they needed to surround them with the right pieces, which Furia has continuously failed to do. That's not entirely their own fault as an org, though. It seems to be part of the whole Brazilian ecosystem with the buyouts.
That's true.
But now they're going for international players, probably because of those Brazilian buyouts. So they've just given up on the idea of getting Big Uzera, of getting Insani, of getting truly the best Brazilian team. But then it just makes me think, like, could Caserato have made more money on a different team? Could he have been on a better team? Could he, like, so many what ifs now emerge that I felt like were answered by the fact that he decided to stay with Furia. But now it's like, they're just moving around him. And I don't know. I would love a long form interview with Caserato as to, like, how he perceives all of these moves, because he just seems like, in the words of Charles Barkley, he's not a bus driver. He's clearly just on for the ride. He's not really a captain in any of this.
I get that impression too, when having, like, spoken to him in interviews before. You know, I think he's just happy to sit in Fury because he's comfy. He's happy to play Counter-Strike. I get the same impression.
By the way, some players, I'll give you an example. That's what someone like Forrest is like. They're even thinking about, like, the IGL and what he's calling. And what. They just play the game, mate. They just boot it up. Whoever's on their team, they try their best that day, and they figure that it'll all work itself out. So I know what you mean. Like, certain people are, it's why, actually, even though we give them shit, people like the Nikos and the Twists of the world, sometimes if they're manipulating the scene, it could be for the appropriate thing. Sometimes someone has to do something if it's getting out of control and things have gone too far.